Good morning, Provost Mare, member of the committee.
Good morning, my name is Provost, member of the committee.
Thank you very much. We've got between now and 1 o'clock to complete our presentations. What is written there on the agenda, just ignore. And would like you to be very pointed in your presentation. Give us what is relevant, and so that the committee would be able to assist wherever we can. We are going to start with the. Maybe you should also introduce yourselves, Sir Def.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I will introduce only the DOD delegation. I know that we are looking like a big delegation, but the rest is ANSCOP, as well as Castle Board. My name is Sam Kulubi. I'm the Secretary for Defense.
Good morning. My name is Reggie, Parliamentary Liaison Officer, DOD.
Good morning, members. My name is Sepiro Sopiala, the Chief Financial Officer of the Department of Defense.
Good morning, Honorable Members. Major General Ramsana, Chief Military Police Strategy and Planning.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Dumisani Saza. I am Chief Director of Strategic Management. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Gloria Spellman. I'm the Chief Audit Strategy for the Department of Defense. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorable Members. I'm Adam Abuchi, the Chief Compliance Officer.
Good morning, Chair and Members of the Committee. I'm General Mwadira, Acting Chief of Logistics. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. I am Major General Ledwaba, COC Defense Transformation.
Good morning, Chair and Members. I'm OC Legato, OC of Western Cape Regional Fleet.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Kelman Lufferen, Chief Executive of the Castle Control Board. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. I'm retired Lieutenant General Nkonyane, Chairperson of the Castle Control Board.
Good morning, Chair and Members. I am Ms. Hilton Kling. I'm the Head of the Deputy Minister's Office of Defence and Military.
Good morning, Chair and Members. My name is Audrey Offenbach. I am a member of the Castle Control Board, appointed by the Minister of Defence and Military Veterans.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is David Hart. I am a member of the Castle Control Board, and I'm appointed by the City. My background is Heritage and Environmental Management.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Colonel Mongo, the Officer Commanding Arms of the Police, Western Cape, and a board member of the Control Board, Castle Control Board.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Manja Ndima, the Chief Financial Officer of the Castle Control Board.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. Sophie Lesson from Parliament's Management.
Good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Colonel Faranza. I am responsible for performance monitoring and evaluation within the SNDF.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Brigadier General T.C. Kondu, Director of Planning in the SNDF.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. I'm Mahendra Singh, responsible for the preparation of the finance.
Good morning, Chair, Honourable Members. I'm Louis Nossel, and I'm responsible for the engineering space.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Karine van den Berg. I'm Director of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation in the SNDF.
Good morning, Chair. This is Amin, Head of Communication.
Good morning, Chair. Kevin Director, CEO of Arms School.
Are we done?
Good morning, Chair.
a member board of Anscom.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. I'm from Anscom. The one who's got a clean audit just recently. My name is Julius Kweyia.
Good morning, Chair. I'm Dumisa Jevilek. I'm a member of the Anscom. Good
morning, Chair, honourable members. My name is Moses Kanyile, Director Anscom.
Good morning, Chair, honourable members. My name is Uichoko Sinne. I'm Anscom's Company Secretary.
Morning, Chair and honourable members. I'm Solomon Zimbada, General Manager of Human Resources at Anscom.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. I'm Temba Kutuba, General Manager of Anscom Top.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. My name is Udum Zeli, General Manager Marketing and Business Development at Anscom.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. My name is Tichang Kavinde, CLO in the Ministry of Defence and Human Resources.
Morning, Chair and honourable members. Vice Admiral retired Fidel Mudim, Chairperson of Anscom Foods.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. My name is Shiku Mkwana, General Manager Acquisition from Anscom.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. My name is Lungana Fogwana, member of the Anscom Board.
Morning, Chair and honourable members. My name is Kurt Fogler, I'm the CFO of Anscom.
Good morning, Chair and honourable members. My name is Kevin Yonalkis, a Senior Manager Strategic Planning of Anscom.
Thank you very much. We are joined by Honourable Bongo, the member of this committee, Honourable Nyani, and Honourable Munishi. They were not here when the members introduced themselves. Thank you very much. We, Chairperson of Anscom Board, the CEO, I think you expect the committee to applaud you for getting a clean audit.
The committee and the committee encouraging us to shoulder on and do the writing inside on that all the time.
Thank you very much. Stop praising this, the fish for swimming. He's praising the fish to be a good swimmer. We are in the process of the DRRR budget review and recommendation reports. Your presentation is going to help this committee to prepare that kind of a report to Parliament. So we are going to give you 2 minutes to do your presentation, Shadef, and then in that order. Over to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Chairperson and honourable members. Because of time, I will be going through the slides just to give an overview. We have secretly presented our 2014-2015 annual report submitted to Parliament on time. So the copies are available for members if they want a full version of the copies in Parliament. Thank you. And then we have circulated the slides also on time. So I'll be talking to the slides very, very quickly and try to finish the presentation allocated 20 minutes. The first few slides talk to the scope. The next two slides, whatever, they talk to the annual report preparation. Then the next two slides after that talk to the defense mandate. And then after that we have the slides highlighting the MTSF outcomes that are relevant to the Department of Defense. Outcome number 11, creating a better South Africa and contributing to a better and safer Africa in a better world. Outcome number 3, all people in South Africa are and feel safe. So that this annual report will be highlighting in terms of various activities towards contributing to this outcome 11 and outcome 3. The first part, the next part of the annual report deals with the financial performance information. On slide number 12, we are indicating that the allocation for this financial year of 42.831 billion constitutes only 1.13% of the GDP. Honorable members, we would like to highlight that this is actually an inadequate allocation for the Department of Defense, even when compared to similar countries in our region. Most of our of countries similar to us in Africa, actually their allocation to defense is more than 2% of the GDP. For instance, Botswana next door, it is 2.7%. Namibia next door, it constitutes 3.1%. Algeria and Angola are about at more than 4% of GDP. Here in South Africa, it's only 1.13% of our GDP, which is 3.7 trillion. In terms of government expenditure, it constitutes 3.7% of the government expenditure, which is 1.1 trillion rands. Then slide number 13 will then highlight that because of this inadequate allocation, it affects the sustainment of this declining defense capability, as well as limits the executing of other commitments, both internally and externally, of the South African National Defense Force operations, and adversely affects the rejuvenation of our South African National Defense Force. This is clearly articulated in the Defense Review, Honorable Chairperson, that this Parliament adopted in June this year as a basis for motivation for increase in the defense funding. The next slide will highlight the breakdown of the expenditure for the financial year under review, comparing it to the previous financial year. As you can be seen, there was no over expenditure or no under expenditure, except to say that that 14.4 million that was not spent out of the 42.8 billion rands for this financial year 2014-2015 was due to some of the funds that needed to be paid to the training authorities, as well as on the land of defense, the industry not able to meet its defense. But even then, it's really insignificant if you consider that it only constitutes 0.03% of the total budget. Slide number 15, we give the annual report and gives the breakdown of expenditure per program. Administration, force, landward, maritime, military defense, intelligence, as well as the general support. And on 16, that is given now in a graph form, as you can see, rightly so, that the largest portion of our budget was spent on force employment, as well as landward defense, air defense, and maritime air defense. This is appropriate because this is actually the core functions of the Department of Defense and the South African National Defense Force. Defense intelligence is really the least expenditure that we have in the Department of Defense. I'm just highlighting this because sometimes when you look at the special defense account and the report of the Auditor General, it states that they gave us qualified audit and basis for qualified audit to a sensitive projects of the Department of Defense. So I'm just highlighting here that that is really the smallest portion of our total expenditure. On slide 17, we then give you the percentage, the largest program for the expenditure. It is rightly so, the landward defense. And then this is followed by the air defense and other programs in terms of expenditure as highlighted there. This, in slide 18, highlights now the classification that the standard chartered accounts, standard chartered of accounts, expenditure classification as provided for in the guidelines of the National Treasury, breakdown for various progress in that regard. And this classification is highlighted in slide number 19 in terms of compensation of employees is slide number 19 and slide number 20. I guess we can post slide number 20 might take care of that. The compensation of employees expenditure was at 54%, and the capital assets at 3%, and the goods and services at 26%. That summarizes the financial performance for the financial year under review. When it comes to the non-financial performance, slide number 22 will be indicating on the indicators, performance indicators that are highlighted in the annual report. And these indicators, they derive from our defense mandate, and also we look at the largest cost drivers in the DOD, as well as the guidelines that are given by the National Treasury. And when we look at those indicators, maybe one can just highlight some of them. It is presented in slide number 23, whereby, as we indicated, that when it comes to the number of professors that share, finally we have reached our target and overachieved on our target. We planned to deploy 41, we deployed 43. And the number of military skills development members that are in the system, these are the youth of South Africa who are recruited, trained, so as to rejuvenate our South African National Defense Force. We would like to have about 4,000 who are in the system, 4,272. The reason I'm using the term in the system is because it will take them two and a half to 3 years of training before they are ready to be deployed into various services that they are trained in. Here we are underachieving, and the main reason for the underachieving of about where only 3,800 were in the system is because of the limitations in our budget. We are highlighting this because if this trend continues, then it means that the rejuvenation of the South African National Defense Force will be highly affected. On the force employment as well, we have here underachieved because not all the capabilities that were placed could be provided. For instance, the Oryx helicopters, the combat support ship, the maritime reaction squadron, and the level 2 field hospitals, all of this because of the limited budget. So this limited budget, it does not affect only the rejuvenation of the personnel in the South African National Defense Force, but as well as the capabilities of the South African National Force, as highlighted in this annual report for the year under review, both in terms of the Air Force, as well as in terms of the Navy and the South African military health services. The other areas where we see the underachievement is number of joint interdepartmental and multinational, I'm on now on slide number 24, multinational military exercise conducted a year. And this number of exercises, we projected 9, but only 5 of them were undertaken. And this is mostly due to change of scope, and sometimes the projected countries not being able to participate or giving the confirmation of participation late. So it is not true that this was due to time frame to obtain ministerial authority, but it is due to change of scope and not getting responses on time from the participating countries. We also have an underachievement in terms of the number of hours, both for force employment hours flown per year, and this was also due to, in terms of our annual targets, because many hours are flown for the year, fewer force employment tasks than predicted due to limited budget, but also in terms of the number of hours at sea, also less than projected, due to sometimes unavailability of the vessels or delayed in the maintenance cycles. So slide number 25 then comes up to summarize this performance. In other words, when you all our targets are taken in their totality, we achieved 74%, and we did not achieve on 26%. This needs further explanation in that when you say 26% not achieved, it does not mean that these targets were totally not achieved. Some of the targets were achieved 90%, some of them up to 99%, but according to the National Treasury guidelines for publications of annual reports at the departments, we can only put it as achieved when 100% achieved. If it is 99% achieved, it is to be recorded as not achieved or partially achieved. So in that regard, then 74% it was 100% achieved. The other slide then in our presentation deal with that aspect of the annual report that looks at the overview of the strategic leadership and management in the Department of Defense, starting with the Minister's office, then dealing with the Secretary of Defense office, in the office of the Chief of the South African Defense Force. On the Minister's office, we highlight that the Minister provided political direction in terms of the ordered commitments to peace, security and stability in South Africa and Southern Africa, as well as the office played a pivotal role in ensuring that all missions were undertaken according to the required political and legal authorization in pursuit of government objectives, and that the Office of the Minister played an active role in the defense diplomacy arena at both bilateral as well as multilateral level. The Office of the Minister provided political direction and oversight of the Department of Defense, and also ensuring the improved South African National Defense Force medical health capability. The Office of the Minister directed the establishment of the Defense Works Commission, which now maintains all our facilities, including our medical facilities. The Minister, during this year under review, appointed a medical task team that looked at ensuring that the professionals that qualify do receive a committed overtime after the audits were done, the payments were then instituted accordingly. Also, that the military hospital is upgraded in order for, especially the one military hospital, so that it can provide the required quality of services. One of the major achievements, I think, from the Minister's office in terms of political direction and oversight was the work towards the adoption of the Defense Review Policy document, which was finally adopted by Parliament in June 15. This now, the Minister has directed that we must do the preparatory work of the Defense Review Implementation Plan. As we speak, the progress is underway on the implementation of the Defense Review 2014, and we will be reporting this during this financial year 15-16. And we'll be happy to come and brief the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Deterrence on plans towards the implementation of the Defense Review Policy document. Slide number 29 then gives the overview that's been provided by the Secretary for Defense Office, which is mainly focusing on governance and accountability. As the head department and the accounting officer overseeing matters of governance and accountability, that office implemented in line with the Minister's directive the pursuit of improved corporate governance, and also completed the task of participation in various government clusters, including the ICTS cluster. And during in the beginning of that year, that office chaired the cluster of DCs on ICTS. And in the following administration that started in 2014, that office now chairs the cluster of DGs of the JCPS, that is the Justice Crime Prevention and Security Cluster. The Office of the Secretary of Presidents also ensures financial control within the department by means of appropriate budget preparation, budget control, and accounting measures, ensuring also the risk management within the department in order to ensure that achievement of predetermined departmental outputs are obtained, and manage the establishment and maintenance of the system of the risk management. In order to bolster the good internal controls, the Office of the Secretary of Defense consolidated the internal audit function, and the internal audit division is now beginning to function effectively, as highlighted by the report of the Auditor General. We also, that office, Secretary of Defense office, ensured the maintenance of stakeholder relationships with the CSIR, which assists the department in the strategic planning of technology and services to the national security sector at large, as well as the upgrade of, and the renewal of projects that were scheduled within the limits of allocation for the weapons systems and technology acquisition in accordance with our budget planning processes. We also developed a roadmap to address departmental interventions in the realization of improved performance information in the Department of Defense. Now, coming to the Office of the South African National Defense Force Chief, provided strategic military direction and instruction to ensure effective command of forces and ensure preparation and employment of forces, and also to contribute to stability and security within the Republic of South Africa as well as on the continent by deploying military capabilities in different areas, including the promotion of security external operations, the operations Mistral in the Republic of Congo, the Operation Korat in the Republic of Sudan, as well as COPA in support of the Mozambican government with counter-piracy operation deployments that started in 2011. The other operations highlighted in slide number 34 are those of Mission Tebe, attaining the support in the DRC for security, and Team Ulisa, which is the writing and translation of the military strategy for the armed forces of the of Congo. The operation Luari deals with the flood relief support that was provided by the ZNDF in Mozambique, in the Mutuba district in Zambezi province, as well as Operation Natal, where the South African National Defense Force assisted during the repatriation of the remains of the South African teams of the collapse of the building in Lagos, Nigeria. When it comes to the support of, to the people and support to the government, the ZNDF employed multi-role military capabilities on request according to the prescripts of the Defense Act 42 of 2002. In this regard, the South African National Defense Force Chief deployed on the ZNDF to provide the South African police services on request, as well as during the events of national importance such as opening of parliament, national election, inauguration of the president, but also Operation Chariot that was provided by the South African National Defense Force, providing capabilities such as helicopters to transport injured people and support the firefighting efforts and providing water bunkers as required. Other operations were Operation Arabella, that is a search and rescue, and this search and rescue that consists of the field of defense force is keeping with support of the people. That is to say, when some of our people venture out of their comfort homes, comfort zones, to go to the mountains and the seas, usually in rough weather situations, and get themselves in trouble, then the South African Defense Force is called upon to come and rescue them. And also we provide protection for various approved related local foreign government visitors and dignitaries. And Operation Corona is related to the safeguarding of our borders. In this regard, the South African Defense Force deployed 13 companies to conduct operations along the various borders in the province. As we know, we require 22 companies to ensure that our borders are not porous. But because of the limited budget, we can only deploy 13 borders. Despite that, there were some significant achievements in this regard during the year under review. For instance, there was confiscation of 45 vehicles, 12,141 illegal foreigners were apprehended, 517 criminals were arrested, 139 stolen vehicles were recovered, 17,112 kilograms of dacha, that's a lot of dacha, was confiscated, and 1,129 livestock were recovered, so was 14 kilograms of copper, and contraband goods to the value of 45 million rands was confiscated, mostly contraband cigarettes. The next part of the annual report was related to the audit outcomes of our financial performance as well as our non-financial performance. Slide number 38, Honorable Chairperson, highlights the historical background and the trend analysis of the audit outcomes. As you can see, the audit effectiveness was broadened, including more items to be audited and the classifications, to a point where by 2006-2007, it was clear that we were getting highest numbers of adverse findings by the Auditor General. Since then, we have put together systems, internal controls, and fine-tuning our processes to a point where since 2006-2007, we have seen a continuous decline in the adverse finding at the Auditor General right up to this year, 2014-2015, where if we had 16 qualifications in 2006-2007, this year we only have one qualification by the Auditor General, which is also limited to the sensitive projects. So if we were like AMCO, we would be having a clean audit, but we have sensitive projects to deal with that we are discussing with Auditor General as to how such projects should be audited. Slide number 39 highlights the fact that the General Defense Account, which really is the bulk of the Department of Defense, had no qualifications. Because the Auditor General says that after conducting the relevant test on the DoD's performance information, they concluded that there was not any material findings on the usefulness and the reliability of that information. Therefore, Auditor General states in slide number 40 that in his opinion, the financial statements presented by the Department of Defense on its General Defense Account presents fair in all material respects, unqualified audit. When it comes to the Special Defense Account, the auditor indicates that, in his opinion, except for the possible effects of the sensitive activities that are described in his basis for qualified opinion paragraph, the financial statements present fairly in all material aspects the financial position of the Special Defense Account, as stated at the 31st of March. What we would like to highlight here is that we engaged with the Auditor General in detail, and we're happy that the Auditor General was able to come and present to the members of the Portfolio Committee, whereby when we were coming into difficulties about the sensitive projects in the Department of Defense, we agreed with the Auditor General that we were going to vet and provide security clearance for the officials who are auditing, or the Auditor General who are auditing the Department of Defense sensitive projects. Despite us making all the disclosures and all the information available to those officials who are security clearance, still the Auditor General say by their very nature these sensitive projects do not provide all the information. For instance, you say that so much money was involved in this in company that was responsible for this and this other sensitive projects, but you are not giving us all the food dispersed, despite the fact that we had given all the food dispersed. And we were just highlighting the fact that nothing has changed. We were never provided any qualified audit for on these associative projects all these years. And nothing has changed from a year before or 2 or 3 years before that. But this year, those who were auditing us decided to change everything and say, like any other sensitive project, you are not getting a clean audit on this and getting an unqualified audit simply because it's a sensitive project. So we are engaging, continue to engage with the auditor general. We hope that the portfolio committee will help us to find a solution to this. If the audit, if this portfolio committee on transnational affairs does not help my office and the office of the auditor general to find each other on this sensitive project, it means that for the next 10 years, you might as well give me a qualified audit. You don't have to audit me. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Over to you, honorable members. Honorable Marae, Honorable Munishi,
thank you very much, Chair, for the presentation. It's much appreciated. I want to start off on your page 12, that Finn's vote, that 1.13%. And I think one must concur with you and have sympathy and empathy with the incredibly low budget. And we know it's tough times. But, you know, eventually government will decide in terms of priorities, you know, whether you want a defence force or not, and that you can get to a point where you can actually waste more money by spending this money, then you must rather close the doors. Because, I mean, and that this is also, and I know that the committee must still get presentations on the defence capabilities and protection capabilities, etc., and the readiness and all those kind of things. But this is most certainly, can I, anyone see, that it must affect, you know, the defence force. And if it goes on like this, one will probably have to go and re-evaluate and reposition and redefine the South African National Defence Force and its strategic objectives and going forward. But obviously on that, I don't know if you can give us some practical examples of consequences of this continuous low budget. And you have referred to, you know, if you bring in inflation, then it's actually a lowering of the budget. So if at all you can give us some practical examples. On page 15, where you're giving the expenditure per program, what is sometimes very concerning is when up to the rand 100% has been spent. Now that's, from an accounting point of view, that's so unlikely, and the financial guys here will know that it is so unlikely that, for instance, on air defense appropriation 691523, actual expenditure 691523. I mean, it's very unlikely that you spent exactly to the rand. So I don't know what is happening there. But there's, I suppose, questions to me in terms of the reliability of the information. And there are quite a number of these forced employment, air defense, maritime defense. Military health is very close to that. Defense intelligence, the general support, it is just, I mean, I don't buy it. You'll have to give us more information to confirm the reliability of these expensive figures. Why is it in 100%? Is it because it has been transferred somewhere else? Because it's easy. If the money has been 100% transferred to another account and the problem or the concerns are there, then tell us that. But if this is actual expenditures, and it works out at 100%, please tell us. I mean, there's not an over expenditure, it's not under expenditure, it's not by a rand, by 10 rand, it's precisely an utter zone wide that with a total budget of this, you get it right on a number of programs to the rand. I don't buy it. Please give us more detail on that. I can only refer you to one example. If you look at page 23, and you look at the number of reserve force person days. Now that must have a major budgetary effect. From projection of 1.8 million, roughly 1.9 million, to 2.7 million reserve force person days. That will have a major effect. Now if you have got that increase in reserve force, and going back to the programs, and you go to 100% expenditure, somewhere you have cut other expenditures, I mean, so precisely fine that you come back to 100% to the rand expenditure. Now you must tell me which amounts and which programs have been cut, so that you can just on that one item where you have an over expenditure, must have an over expenditure, a substantial over expenditure, that you get to precisely the rand expenditure. There are more examples. Because, you know, if it's not reliable information and credible information, Mr. Secretary, it's doubt over everything that you said. And it brings more questions than answers. We must know that the information that we're getting is reliable and is credible. Then you can move forward. It is very easy. I want to jump to the expenditure as per SCOA, and specifically the expenditure on employees. Now, I mean, it's 54%, and I think in any organization and in any department, 54% is way beyond a reasonable expenditure on staff. And if you take the National Defence Force, where you need major capital expenditure, and you need a lot of other transfers, a lot of other expenditure. Now you're spending 54% on employees, and I assume these are permanent full employees, and not the temporary ones. In the past, I know that there was this 80-20 principle where 80% is reserve force and temporary force, and 20% of permanent force. Now it seems like the other way around. Principle of 80% is permanent force, and 20% is reserve force or temporary force. And surely this must have a major impact on your budget and your capabilities of responding to defense, protection, peacekeeping, etc. It must have a major implication. And if you could give us more information on that, why it's so high, and obviously with the budgetary constraints and as the treasury's constraints, what are you going to do to bring that down to more manageable and acceptable levels? If I go to page 23, and I just want to refer you to the forced employment within the SADC regions, where you say that underachievement is not all capabilities which could be provided, or it's helicopters, blah, 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 etc., those things. Why is that? Is it because our equipment and those are not properly maintained? Is it because we haven't got skills to man those things? Is it because we haven't got pilots? Because remember, I just referred you now to 54% spent on staff, which obviously means that you've got people. You've got enough people employed. So why have you got problems in terms of the capabilities to place to that? Is it because our equipment is not properly maintained? And if so, why not? I mean, we are involved in not only SADC, but we are involved in Central Africa. We remember that when we visited defense headquarters, quite a number of concerns was raised with us. Amongst others, you have seen on the slideshow how the vehicles were stuck. And it was quite clear that our equipment is not compatible with the requirements in South Africa. How does that affect us? Is this part of this problem? That we have equipment that don't meet the requirements? Is it old stuff? Is it not properly maintained? We need to know more about this, and this raises a lot of questions. On the involvement in Central Africa and other, a number of these programs that you've mentioned, I want to know, you do your budget on a yearly basis. You do your budget for expenditures on a yearly basis. Do you provide 100% for all the expenditures that you incur during a year? In other words, your flights to Central Africa, all the costs involved in Central Africa and to everywhere, is that 100% budgeted or and is it provided for? In other words, are all these projects known to you and the cost of that known to you? The other side of the coin is, we know that there are revenue coming from, there's revenue coming from the AU and the United Nations, because we don't do it for free. Now, on the one hand, I can understand if the National Treasury will tell you, no, you've got your own budget, you've got your own appropriation of funds, so you must manage that. Whether it's in South Africa or Central Africa or wherever. If that is not the case, how do you manage that and make sure that there's extra revenue coming to the Defence Force? Or what do you need from us? Because remember, the chairman said this is a BRRR process. So if the committee must play a role to influence the Minister of Finance budget, whether it's medium term or in February, this is the process that you must say to us, no, sorry, our expenditure are way beyond, we need more money because of this and this and this. Not nice to be, must be essential stuff. So please, and also, if I look at the, it's also page 24, Force employment, where you say that number of joint interdepartmental etc. was 9, actually it was 5. Again, you've referred to the exercises were not executed due to capacity problems. Please be more specific in terms of capacity problems. Is it only budgetary problems, or is other skills problems as well? If it's skills problems, obviously what can be done? And what are you doing to fight that? On air defense, we have read lately in reports and in newspapers, whether that's true or not, is that we've got a lot of fighter jets. Some of them it's very difficult to get all the flying hours that you require. Here we see projected 6,985 hours, only 5,026 achieved. What is the practical effect of that on our aircraft that is not properly then used or utilized? And then more specifically, on our pilots. Because obviously if you don't fly enough hours, you cannot get your certificate, you know, that you are a proper pilot and that you can do the work, especially when it comes to commanding pilots. And we have read about this in the papers everywhere, why government is using private jets, because there is not enough commanding pilots with their flying hours to fly even the president. So this must have a major effect. And eventually it must have a major effect on budget if you must go and hire in pilots. So here is a concern that I've identified to say, if it's so many few less hours that is pilots are flying, with the increased demand, if you look at Central Africa and all the other projects, the programs that you've referred to, It seems like there must be a high demand for flying hours, but there's a substantial few hours being flown. So please give us all those details and the effect, the practical effects that that will have. We've also read that apparently the pilots were visiting to Russia for training. And surely you must give us more information on that. How will that affect the budget? Who's paying for that? Is it Russians or is it us? We don't have Russian planes, if I'm correct. So what is the effect of training pilots in Russia, but we don't have Russian planes? How will that affect our readiness? And how will that affect our requirements for commanding pilots, for chop pilots, or specifically those that we have? And I was also always under the impression that we had excellent training facilities in South Africa. Some in the north, some in the south. There were excellent training facilities. But now it seems like we don't have that anymore. What happened to those assets? Was it just gone? Was it just dilapidated? Is it been shelved? Why don't we use that? It's a huge asset, Langebaan. And I go on, and we know all about these things. On page 25, I just want to point out to you, sir, that while you say 39% is not fully not achieved, or it's partially 99%, if you take what I've referred to now so far, it's the critical stuff, critical core business of the Defence Force. And if you take that, then 39 or 26% is very high, because you can actually paralyze the Defence Force if it's some of those critical and core performances that you don't achieve. Then you can, because I can go back and I can refer you to the Auditor General's report, where it comes to human resources and the consequence management. You're doing excellent, but otherwise you've got south. Seems like people are looking after each other. But when it comes to skills, and when it comes to critical performance issues, then you've got a problem. Challenges, let me rather use that phrase. Then you've got problems, even in terms of the Auditor General's report. Because remember, you must compare that, you must evaluate that in terms of the Defence Force, the National Defence Force. It's very critical, very specialized. So if you underperform, then you're going to have a major effect on South Africa. I think I've dealt with most. Oh, in terms of the Auditor General's report, they have referred to irregular expenditure of nearly 559 million rand, and fruitless and wasteful expenditure of 63 million. That's in terms of the Auditor General's report that we have seen last week. Please give us more detail on those items. And then lastly, I want to concur with you in terms of the Auditor General's findings on the Special Defence Account. Surely, one would expect, yes, I know, there's a lot of safeguards that you need in terms of Special Defence Accounts. But surely the Auditor General, Mr. Chairperson, can develop a process of using maybe various persons in the Auditor General to audit certain aspects of the Special Defence Account, and eventually you add up and you say, okay, you have it means that we should be happy with that, rather than come up with a qualification because of the sensitiveness or the secrecy around the accounts, now you qualify that. That seems to me unacceptable, and one would expect the Auditor General, with a lot of checks and balances, to be able to give either a qualified or unqualified opinion on the Special Defence Accounts. Thank you very much, Chair.
Last time your colleague covered you. I hope you also covered him.
Thank you
very much, Sheraton, and thanks for the presentation from the department. I think Sheraton, the department, should be commended for the progress it has made in the financial year under review. We can see that the department is moving forward, although there are some problems which need some improvement, but we really appreciate. The AG indicated that the department had fruitless and wasteful expenditure to the amount of 63,000 down from 303 in the previous financial year. Although this amount is insignificant in comparison with the previous year, as a committee, we encourage the department to totally eliminate this expenditure. We hope that next time we won't find any fruitless expenditure in their report. The portfolio committee chairperson, as well as the AG, has raised the importance of paying invoices within 30 days, as it can lead to closure of small as well as medium businesses. I think the department needs to properly monitor creditors' payments as well as implementing effectively budgetary controls to ensure that payments are made on time. Chairperson, rooting out corruption and fraud is very much important and is also part of our manifesto as the ruling party. Can the subject explain on the 40% target and only 13.4 achieved? Were all members that were found guilty expelled from the SAMTF? What happened? I need some clarification on that one. And Chen would like to know from the department how is the level of discipline in the army, since we once heard that some of our soldiers were recalled in the DRC due to ill discipline. Can the SAMTF expand on that issue? And Chairperson, my last question is a clarity-seeking question from SAMTF. I need some explanation. What is the status with regard to the Human Resources Charter? What is the timeline for its implementation? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Can I oh, Honorable Sal, I thought you were coming.
Thank you very much, Amuche. I think I'm very, very specific. Just an update properly on Project Wolf Easter. I'm not going to ask about Project Food. And Project Viral, the advocacy measures, because I see that in the plan to be rolled out, what is the status of that particular project as well. Then I think the issue also on national youth policy issue. How far is the department with that policy, and also the defense industrial strategy. There was also the modernization strategy by the stockyard. I don't know if we can discuss it here or with arms specifically, but it had to do with DOD specifically also in terms of the funding and support for that strategy. Of course, the issue of revitalization of reserves, we're looking at an average age of 36 years of reserves. And is the recruitment going to take place? At this moment, I'm receiving a lot of complaints of reserves that are unemployed. They claim they don't have work. It seems that they are totally dependent on the department to provide opportunities to actually serve in the defense or on operations for border control, and that seems to be the only form of income. If there's other initiatives in place to retrain reserves or to have them instilled to do other jobs so that they can find employment in a business or in industry and not be dependent only on defense for that type of work. The other one is, of course, the MSDS is a worry because I don't know what is the exact average age of the soldier today. And, of course, this goes with the MEMS that have been discussed. Is there any movement on the MEMS? I see there's a significant amount of resignations that's taking place within SAETF. But it may be good and it may not be good. In terms of critical posts and operations, it's a threat. But if it is people that need to leave as part of natural attrition, and we're looking at, of course, the education taking place, then it goes in line with the exit mechanism being employed, people resigning and leaving the force, and new members can then come into the force that can rejuvenate it. But I have a problem because I'm sitting here with all the critical posts that was also in the media of the shortage and the air crew, and that help may be asked of SAA to step into African Airways because of pilots. There's a long list here of airspace control, aircraft, anti-aircraft, artillery, combat, heavy engineers, vehicle professionals, nursing, technical. And we look at that and we can see the vacancy. The vacancy, for instance, just in air crew, that's the quarter-to-quarter vacancy rate is 42.3%. And we can go to one of the other big ones, engineers. We got this 60.7%. Nursing, technical, that's 22 and 31. And of course, there's also this, so that is a worry, and also in terms of our military hospitals, that is a serious challenge. We had a recent visit there by the committee, we made inquiries, we asked questions, and of course, we brought to our attention that yes, there is a shortage of highly skilled professionals at these hospitals. So it's a worry for me. The other one has been spoken about already. I'll move on immediately to litigation. It seems the success rate of litigation is 21% success. The department claims it got 8.6%. Now that I need to know what is exactly the case. Are they losing more cases than winning cases? Because money is also being set aside for claims against the state. So we can just get an update with the litigation. And of course, we know the nature of the case was explained to us before. Another one is, there's an issue raised with the department, and of course it's one that has been taken up by other departments of the government. The number of posts in relation to a quota for international institutions, where people are seconded to posts but they're not permanently employed. And that has not changed. So it creates a problem because a person is seconded, is paid by a particular department but serves in another department. So if you make somebody permanent, that means the secondment comes to an end, you have to react, then you have to employ and recruit a new person. And that would probably be the ideal situation of just a seconding and having people serve there for a period at the expense of another institution, another government institution. So that particular issue, what arrangements have been made, particularly for international institutions. The UNAU reimbursement, we're happy with the reimbursement that taking place. That's at 80% the target. It was 78% return. The last one was 75%. And the other part, as the Secretary of Defense explained to us, yes, it is because of the serviceability of vehicles and other things that they do not fully reimburse the SANDF for the use of the equipment in those peace missions. So what is being done with that? And then the other project which comes to mind is the JPEG project that you spoke about. And of course, the whole issue of the equipment, has that been addressed? And because it's a number of countries involved, like in Asia, are their vehicles more suitable for the region? Or I know that people are basically employed with their vehicles. The soldiers come with the equipment and everything, regardless if it's suitable for the terrain or not. Is that the ideal situation, or can better solutions be found so that it can optimize the performance of the armed forces in that particular institution and not impede the actual performance? So if you've got the wrong equipment in the wrong region, you set yourself up for more trouble. Of course, the other one is which posts are not filled in mission areas. We've got a 98% achievement there out of 99. Are these posts that are outstanding critical posts, or are they just junior posts? If they are senior critical posts, then I've got to worry. The work formation, there's been not achieved 70%, they achieved 60%. We've seen the performance, we've been on the visit, we've seen them actually doing work, whether it's at the castle, whether it's at the hospitals we went to go visit, that nursing colleges, we saw the work formation in action. And of course, the department was extremely happy with the performance because public works have never come to the party. And the performance is actually deputed when it comes to the public works. So the issue of the endowment property is still being transferred and not being under public works, what is the progress on that situation? The maintenance, of course, we know the human support has come particularly to Anzano, for the vehicles that they've done. But we visited the military academy also on a visit with the PC. We went around and there were serious complaints of the military police that the vehicles are standing there in the yard, they can't use it, and also impede their performance. So I said, the Cubans are not here yet. But they say no, they don't have it. It's a specific license that the Cubans are working, but it's not dealing with actually all the vehicles that are outstanding, the unserviced vehicles that can't be driven, that's lying down, or some that are just damaged that need just immediate repairs. So how far can Project Tusano be extended to improve the serviceability of all the vehicles within the armed force, and if those vehicles also put in line with the project that has produced excellent results and also a value on the return on investment. So issue of maintenance, that is a continuous issue. Even last visit now just recently with the cluster also showed that the buildings of defense is in a very, very poor condition, and to put it mildly. And I see that the DOD's refurbishing project will only achieve 50%. Target of 70%, 35 was achieved, are 30 out of 60 projects. Can that be expedited? If that's the target that is being set, are those targets being commitments, meaning they are funded commitments? When you say 60 needs to be done, are they actually funded? Because we achieved 30, which means there's underspend in the refurbishing program. The capital project under public works, again, see there is underperformance of 26 out of 70%, which is 5 out of 17 projects. That is way under the target, and I think the DOE is extremely unhappy about that, so something needs to be done about it. Complaints is at 43%, can that be improved, dealing with complaints? The DOD, we have discussed it, we've also made a commitment that the research capability within defense will be addressed. In that matter, is still not being addressed. The impact performance is also under target of 2.5, it's actually 2.1. So we want to know the impact achievements, what has been done about it, and from the measures and interventions taken, have we seen improvements on all the indicators for impact. Collective grievances between 127 is good, but I'd like to know what prevented the department from not dealing with all of it, and the nature of the collective grievances. We know essentially was promotional issues, survey issues, and benefits. So just to give her the nature of the collective grievances lodged against the department. This one is also unacceptable. We've had discussions many times about it. 89% of 7 years performance agreements have been signed. We said it must be 100%. It must not be repeated. There is no compromise on it, not even one. And if somebody does not sign, then of course disciplinary action needs to be taken against that person for misconduct. They are senior people, and it's important that when they are recruited, they sign immediately when they join the DOE. The internal audit capacity, we hear about the improvement as an ongoing exercise, and I think we need to know exactly the capacity, because that is the instrument that prevents underspending, overspending, irregular, fruitless, all the measuring controls, internal controls are being attacked. And we can't avoid it. Like a fruitless expenditure, we can avoid it if it follows the process. But is there sufficient capacity for doing that? Now, of course, the concern I have is that there's three sub-programs where money was augmented, particularly for the compensation of employees. Now, when we plan as a department, we have a staff complement, which makes up 54% of this budget. But we find that more money has been set aside and implemented for paying workers in the DOE. Now, for what purpose was that done? Why was more money implemented when you had a planned, funded personnel budget set aside? Why did you need more money? Are these people consultants? Are they contractors? Are they co-opted or seconded for a period? What was the money you needed for? The multinational exercises, I think the department must be fair to itself. They can look back on the last 5 years. There's always been an underperformance in achieving those targets, and for different reasons. Maybe we should lower the target so that we're realistic, because we're repeating the same. We never achieve it. So the multinational exercises, there's different reasons, even the South African Navy personnel, they've been in training with the Naval Control and Guidance of Shipping to study and therefore that also impacted on some of the exercises, multinational exercises. So if we are, if our planning on one side is taking place, and that was an ad hoc arrangement, somebody had to train, and then suddenly a multinational exercise, which is planned a year or more ahead, then you have some training happening at one end. That doesn't make sense to me. For such a department that's supposed to be very well disciplined, very well organized, this is military precision. So I can't accept it that somebody just goes for training and a multinational exercise is just, you know, disbanded. So I think we need to have that. The other one is that generally the targets have fallen below, which means the reporting at this particular forum becomes problematic unless we ask the questions of those things that are not required to report on. So if we are reducing, like for instance in program 3, the targets have gone from 23 to 4, it's now only 2 targets. Now that simply means oversight is highly restricted on what we can ask. So we have to ask the questions of what's actually not in the report that you have to report on. So those targets, I think we need to relook at it. We have set certain targets, like cyber security for instance. I don't see the target. But it's an important target and issue going forward in terms of all countries in the world. And South Africa has committed itself yesterday developing the strategy. They will, of course, research matter and come up with solutions and things. There's no target. So that makes sense to me. So we must not remove targets simply because we don't want to report on it, but it's actually very critical. There were two of the learning courses also cancelled. Why were they cancelled? I think we had reasons before. In this case, we'd like to know in this particular case, what were the reasons for cancelling two of those programs. The fermenting as well, there's been a number of fermenting. The department did get an unqualified report. We accept that. But when vermin is taking place, we normally ask questions when it comes out of very important programs, like the air defense that comes out of the health sector, why do you move it from very important programs that have committed programs? And of course, things happen and you can't use your money and then you must use it elsewhere. But at the same time, that particular program did not perform it, did not achieve its objectives because that amount of money has been shifted somewhere else. So the planning and arrangements are but the concern that programs may not perform. Well, there may be good reasons for it, and I think that's what we probably like to hear, and the department can explain and stuff on those matters. I'm not going to speak about flying hours and sea hours. That has been coming along, and we have agreed that it affects the performance of our soldiers in doing their job. There cannot be a compromise on the number of hours that soldiers in those particular areas must do to be, of course, ever ready to respond to issues. If we reduce those hours, we reduce the performance and of course readiness of those particular individuals in the armed forces. So what we need to know is what is also the VIP of our flying hours compared to the operational flying hours. Are we waiting now for just special deployment or special flights to take place so we get added onto our list? Or is there a set program to achieve the target, the minimum target that we set for those hours to be done? So maybe we should have a clear discussion how VIP flights have been used to fill up the hours that's required. The defense intelligence, I think the SDA would like to know also, I think from the request from the Secretary of Defense, that they would like to improve on the performance of the SDA, and because it's a very sensitive area and people need to be better to do the job. But the individuals that actually discuss more the SDA than this committee would be defense or intelligence. Now all the people are supposed to be vetted. Now I don't understand if it is such, why isn't the closer cooperation with intelligence that are all vetted, that discuss all the projects, sensitive projects? We don't discuss it. If somebody gets some fear, ballpark figure, these are a number of projects maybe, this is the amount of money, this is maybe what's happening there, it's actually fine. We are not vetted to discuss those that sensitive information. So I see my oversight has been so limited that I cannot even get any input. So why don't we deal with the committee that is set up for that to do it properly and see that we get the performance and the department can then say, we want a clean audit. But if a sensitive project out there is always going to cause an unqualified audit, how do you deal with it? It means that this department is always at risk to be unqualified. Why should it be? So there needs to be a mechanism in place so that the department can perform, say, we can achieve the clean audit. Regardless of the information that is there, even if sensitive, the measures have been put in place to deal with it. So I'd like to see that cooperation happens and that intelligence can also support this department so that we can achieve a clean audit. The ministerial medical party, I think we'd like to have some answers on the findings and recommendations that they've made. The stock of medication dropped from 83% right down to 50%, and even the public sector, public health. How can we put the armed forces and all our vets and everybody that's supposed to hold a special place in the society at 50% stock that's available? What is the department doing about that? And what is government really committing themselves to? What are the recommendations? Besides the critical posts that are lacking there, there's also the issue of the medical stock. The intelligence, we have a few topics that have been said. I'm not going to speak about it because we know nothing about it. On program 8, we had a moratorium on disposal of the summer vehicles. We spoke about it. What is the progress in that regard for those vehicles? We have the subsidy committee before, and I'd like to know what is the process. Also, the vetting of suppliers. We have that delays in the vetting, and that also impacts on the performance when it comes to procurement and the CM as well. What measures have been to expedite it? I know the department complains because it's a different department that must do the vetting. I'm coming to the last section. I think the inadequate budget, we understand that we know the defense review has spoken to it, and I think that is a clear political decision that must be made, and the cabinet and of course national treasury needs to come to the party so that we can implement the defense review. Otherwise the defense review will still just be another policy. Underspending, we'd like to know, even if it's little, there's been good performance. I applaud the department, but when we still have underspending, we'd like to know, could it have been prevented? And particularly when it comes to landward defense, which is the army. Now it says it blames industry for not complying or able to see to the needs of the defense force, and therefore we had an underspending. But we also know on the other hand that prior mission equipment is lacking, and money, if it's underspent, it's there. It does it affect what their commitment makes to the money? Because we didn't speak about a rollover at all. If some commitment was then signed and the contract is in place, we would roll over the funds to secure the product the next year. In this case, there's no rollover, so there's money available, and there are soldiers in need of prime mission equipment. Why has money not been allocated? Because that's what through the same program. Of course, the forced employment would speak to program 2, and landward defense would speak to program 3. But it's our soldiers that are in need of the assistance. The HR, we see that the HR, I think I have also the significant numbers of people that resigned. As I asked earlier, if we can just get some explanation and how that impacts on the performance of the partner. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any other question from members? None. I thought we would end this session by 1 o'clock, but seemingly the members feel that we wouldn't have done justice to it. We will have to end another hour after lunch. We'll do lunch at 1 o'clock so that I'm supposed to do presentation and the customer control board. I don't expect their presentation to be long, very short. Very short and brief. Sadef, can you have you responding? You are going to respond up until we go to lunch. Lunch will be at 1 o'clock. Then we will come back at 2. We hope to run up everything if honorable members are comfortable. I just hope there are no members who are going to other committees. Honorable Bongo's call. Okay. So, Jeff.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, and thanks to the Honourable Members, especially for the support and accommodation they've given to the Department on improving its performance over the year under review. The practical consequences of underfunding, as we indicated, Honourable Moray is right that 1.13% is not adequate. And the consequences of that, I think, is highlighted throughout the report and also the defense review in terms of affecting the capabilities of the defense force. This can be seen both in our deployments. I think right now, as we have to look at these core functions of in order to evaluate those consequences. The core functions of the Department of Defense, number one, when it comes to border safeguarding, the consequences are that our borders are porous because of limited funding. The borders are not effectively defended. When it comes to maritime security, we would have liked to see our maritime capabilities being more effective in our participation in fighting the piracy on the Mozambican Channel that limits the number of hours at sea for our vehicles, as well as the maintenance and upgrades of these Navy vessels is affected by the limited funding. When we would like to begin to engage in areas in terms of evaluation of threat on the Atlantic Ocean itself, from the Gulf of Guinea coming down to the Benguela area, the involvement of the Navy there is limited, not to where we'd like to be and the commitments that we make. For instance, we are supposed to have had commitments now for a tripartite agreement with Namibia and Angola on the maritime security and our participation in supporting our southern countries in accordance to our maritime strategy. So we are not able to implement our own planning and strategy and planning in our SADC maritime security because of the limited funding. When it comes to the next core function of the Defense Force in terms of the peacekeeping operations, as you've indicated, the UN will not be reimbursed as if the equipment, whether it's vehicles, helicopters, or others that are deployed, are not serviceable. Used to be 70% serviceable, now we have improved it to 80, but still we're not where we want to be. That limits the amount that we get reimbursed from the United Nations. When it comes to the support to the people, from time to time, like Operation Fear that is conducted now, we are required to support the people, to support the police. Our participation there is getting limited because of our limited funding. Most of the time, we even get requests for search and rescue operations to support our South African citizens who are in need of such support, who are not able to do so because of their limited availability, and also whether it's at sea or inland, in all cases of disaster management. So basically, this limits the core functions of the South African National Defense Force due to the limited budget that we have. I agree also, Honorable, that it is not possible to spend your money up to the penny. How are we able to make sure that these programs are able to spend exactly to the amount that is allocated? I think I can indicate that most of the time it means moving funds from programs that are not performing to the programs that are performing. Most of the time we're able to give expenditure to the exact value that is budgeted due to the categories that can be referred to as inventory when it comes to the spare parts. If now we find that you saw police vehicles that are parked there and not repaired, it could mean that there is no money available for them. But if there is one program that is not spending, I would have to take money from that program that is under spending and give it to the police so that the police can be able to, I mean, the military police are able to spend on this. So the figures that have been provided, I think, are liable. And the Auditor General has, after discussing them with the Auditor General and correcting any other misstatements that we have, we have been able, I think, we can take the Auditor General's word when he says they fail to present the expenditures for the financial year that is under review. The 4% that is spent on employees is because of the nature of the South African National Defence Force. I think that for the Defence Force to carry out its operations, we do need boots on the ground. Without the personnel, without the people, without the human resources, the South African Defence Force will not be able to fulfill its mandate. There's still a debate in terms of whether it should be 40% or should it be 50% expenditure on employees. But by the time you classify the expenditure, for instance, when you deploy people, whether it's across the country, into the borders, the allowances that are being spent there for this kind of deployment is being put as expenditure on employment or remuneration expenditure. So because of the nature for the transportations that is always required, as it is right now, this Monday we started the military exercises of the Africa Standby Force in Luhaka, started on Monday until the 5th of November. We had to deploy our members of the South African National Defence Force from all over the country into Luhaka. When they were all transportation and by the time they deployed and the allowances that goes with it is all being captured as the expenditure on employees. So my response to it is because of the nature of the South African National Defence Force that see so much heavy expenditure on the employees. If it comes to 54%, of course, it's because of the budget itself that is limited. If our budget was 75 billion rand instead of 42 billion rand, it would not be 54% employees expenditure. Maybe it will be where most people would say it should be at around about 40-45% expenditure. That might also answer the question on the reserve force. I think you have a regular force and you have the reserve force. You utilize both the regular force and the reserve force. And I hear Honorable Sam when he says maybe the people who are in the reserve force feel they are not getting enough opportunities to serve. Some of them, that's their own income that they will have. We have taken that into account. We can inform the members of the portfolio committee now that if you look at our deployed forces out there in the borders and in the peacekeeping mission, 45% of the forces deployed are from the reserve force. And our target was around about 30-40% because we would really like to continue using the reserve force. And as it is, 45% are from the reserve force. The issue of the post-employment underachievement on the bodies, helicopter, naval vessels, and level 2 hospitals, the equipment capability, and not able to be properly maintained, has really been due to the limited funds that we have. And the reinvestment by the UN for our, the planning. When we plan, I think one of the great was person when we plan, I was able to plan for this financial year how many operations are we going to engage in, how many peacekeepers and how many other. We plan to the best of our ability, but we still have those unforeseeable operations that we find ourselves engaged in. Those, when we, like tomorrow, I mean, there will be midterm review budget presentation, I think, from the National Treasury. They might highlight that we had requested that some of the funds be provided back to us from the UN, because when the MTF that we are now running was presented 2 or 3 years ago, we were not involved in peace enforcement in the DRC. Now, because of the UN Security Council resolution, we had to engage in peace enforcement, and the Force Intervention Brigade was established, meaning that we had to deploy ROIFAs and as well as Oryx helicopters and more fighting machines, fighting equipment into the peacekeeping or peace enforcement operation. That has resulted in unforeseeable expenditure that we would then request the National Treasury to allocate for us for those unforeseeable. Sometimes they agree, but they never, at no point in time, they give us everything that we request for. We have never had that. They will give maybe half of what we request for, a quarter, or up to 3/4 sometimes, in Malaki, from what we request for those unforeseeable. So we try to also have the contingency measures to say that in case of unforeseeable circumstances, this is the kind of expenditure that we would like to have. We had even indicated that we would like the Parliament to enable us to provide for the floods in Mozambique, because come January we all know that the Zambezi River is going to overflow and all those floods are going to end up in Mozambique, and our neighbors are going to ask for help. And when they ask for help, at that point in time, we can't say no. We have to respond to that. For this financial year, 15-16, the budget for the floods in Mozambique, the answer is no. Yes. The host employment for the exercises, I think we did indicate that sometimes it's out of our control, the number of committed exercises that we put projections on the number of exercises based on our defense, international relations, and defense cooperation discussions and agreements and discussions that we have with various countries, and that gives us projections. Sometimes those projected military exercises do not take place. The practical effect of non-utilized aircraft, especially on pilots, and the use of the private jets and pilots without enough flying hours, I think we can cover that response and include all other questions that have been raised about the skills generally in the South African National Defense Force. The chief of the South African National Defense Force and his military command council, they are from time to time, I mean, day in and day out, engaged in various activities to address the shortages of skills in the South African National Defense Force. I think it is only fair that one informs the members that we do have shortages of skills, especially professional skills when it comes to engineers, when it comes to aviation, technical technicians, technical skills, as well as when it comes to the medical skills, whether it is specialized skills of medical doctors and nurses. We do not have the required number of the required capacity to maintain. But that is not just unique to us. I think it's a phenomenon that affects defense forces all around the world, because it's true that even after we train them, they always have better opportunities in the private sector than they will in the public sector. I don't think it will take us a long time before we can reach a stage where we can compete effectively with the private sector in terms of remunerations, benefits, and conditions of service. But we do our best, and yes, we do deploy a training of pilots both inside South Africa, and we are looking internationally as well. Where we can train pilots. We do all of this to try and mitigate the risk of limited skills that we have. So we do send pilots to be trained in Russia. This is actually the first time that we have done that. We have not done that before. And I'm told, I'm not an Air Force pilot myself, but I'm told that the training that they're receiving in Russia is a high-quality training of more than 4 or 5 years sometimes. These youngsters that we send them, that I think for me it's far better that we are sending these youngsters both from the Navy and Air Force to Russia, because otherwise they'll be sitting at home because the conditions of training inside the country are not that adequate and are not that affordable. Of course, we pay for some of the costs that is involved in this training. I'm so happy that we have started this program rather than to have the MSBS and the youngsters complaining that after we have trained, you don't utilize us. So now we are effectively utilizing them, sending them for the long-term training. I'm talking long-term. When these kids return in 5 years, they will not be able, they will be very efficient and they will come here to train other pilots. Whether it's Russian equipment or American equipment, the German equipment, as a scientist myself, mathematics is mathematics. Whether it's French mathematics, Russian mathematics, American mathematics, mathematics is mathematics. And that's what we are going to be learning. And when it comes to the fact it's not achieved, that they might have, yes, I think I fully agree. Those targets that are not achieved because of the limited funding will have an impact on our performance research. But I think what the members were saying is that the DOD needs to be commended for the achievement under extremely difficult conditions with limited funding, almost doing the best that we can with the medium that we have to have achieved to a point where we have achieved and we are showing all of these achievements that are highlighted throughout the report. I'm going to ask the CFO to talk to our fruitless and wasteful expenditures, but they're all captured here on page 311 of our full book. And they're all disposed and declared as such. But I think I'll leave it to him to talk to those fruitless expenses, not 63,000, I think it's 63,000. Yeah, well, that's a big achievement. I mean, taking into account what it was last year. Yeah, thanks. Thank you.
You have 12 minutes to round up.
No, I'm wrapping up now. But we accept from the members that we need to do something about our fruitless and wasteful. It's unacceptable, no matter how much low progress has been. Payment within 30 days, as Honorable Minister was indicating, we are setting up systems now, and I'm told from the CFO that is beginning to improve. I personally have taken as present instruction issued to all the civil services that they must take they must put payment within 30 days as part of the performance agreements that everybody needs to sign, and also fight corruption in all levels of our department. The members that were withdrawn from the DRC, they were about 50, and they were found that in one of the military bases, of deployed bases in the DRC, there was an entertainment center that was established in the neighborhood of that area, and a number of them, being youngsters, adolescents, hormones, medical seeking, getting to them, going around there, coming late at night, and then, of course, unacceptable, totally unacceptable. When you are deployed in such missions, you are putting your forces, comrades in danger. They were immediately withdrawn. They are presently undergoing the military justice processes that is taking place. So we don't take very kindly to that for that kind of ill discipline that comes. But overall, we have been satisfied with the level of discipline in our South African Defence Force. That is improving greatly. I don't know whether one should refer to that as members of the reserve force, but it's not here nor there. If you're a member of the Defence Force, whether reserve or regular, discipline is discipline. And that's why so drastic and immediate action was taken against them. The HR Charter has taken a while to be developed in order to ensure that it is aligned to a defense review policy document that we've just adopted. But, it's part of our defense review implementation team. And this also will talk to the military exit mechanisms that is now being implemented to address the rejuvenation of the South African Defense Force using both the military skills development systems as well as the utilization of the reserve force. So that is part of our HR strategic planning towards the rejuvenation, which is part of our defense review implementation. On project Wu-based aero and hydrography, my colleagues with the clean audit are going to address it. I've subcontracted Wu-based aero and hydrography to them. They tell us where they're. Of course, I mean, we work together. They inform us every Monday in terms of all of this progress. But I think since that year, I'm so happy that, yeah, that they will be able to inform us. And if this includes the AMSO strategy, turnaround strategy, that they will present this afternoon, as well as maybe they can answer questions on that, as well as the dockyard, which is part of the AMSO strategies that they are involved in. When it comes to the success rate in the litigation targets, I think now it is improving. There was a time when we were struggling with most of the litigation against the Department of Defense. Now the area that is of concern to me now is in the medical field. There is a new phenomenon in the South African society. I think the Minister of Health has talked about it, whereby anyone who gets a wound infection thinks of suing the doctor. And we'll read the world literature on surgical wounds. It's known 5% of people who have these major operations will get wound infection, complicated wound infection. When you go to the operating room, it's a risk that you take. Today, there's 5% risk that you, anywhere in the world, it's not you, but that 5% is going to sue you. Then that's what I'm worried about. That sometimes our lawyers and our judges do not read, they don't differentiate between normal processes of surgical procedures versus negligence. If 5% of all patients out of 100, if 5% out of 100 that I operate on get wound infection, does not mean that I'm negligent. I should not be sued. All it means, did I give you informed consent? If you find an informed consent and say, yes, doc, I know that I have 5% chance of getting wound infection, but I agree that please operate on me, then you shouldn't sue. You have no basis for suing. So these are the kind of issues that we're dealing with in terms of educating our healthcare professionals as well as educating our patients about informed consent that it means, so that we can start reducing these number of litigation cases. And personally, they are called negligent when actually they are not negligent cases. And the issue of secondment to international institutions, how are we managing it? We have reduced tremendously. From time to time, we take applications that we are required to deploy, for instance, to the AU, to deploy to the UN, to deploy to SADC in Botswana, in Gaborone, in Addis Ababa, in New York, in Geneva. No, not Geneva, mostly in New York, Addis Ababa. And it's our country's commitment. So there, I don't look at that as wasting the money from the Department of Defense. I see as a national commitment, as a national commitment that at least part of my budget should go towards supporting the government priorities and initiatives. But it's not that much, really, it's at the end of the day. The progress report on the transfer of endowment, we're happy to report that the Minister of Public Works, Honorable Minister Mwesi, has signed an MOU to transfer endowment properties to the Department of Defense, Defense Endowment Properties, for our maintenance. We are now developing skills inside our department for the maintenance of these facilities and the management of these immovable properties. In other words, management, property management portfolio. For now, I'm engaged with AMSCO to see whether they can develop those skills for us to ensure that this transferred endowment properties are properly maintained. The project to stand of involving the Cubans in training our people to maintain their own vehicles is going very well, and this will help a great deal for the deployed troops, that when you drive a vehicle, you must be able to maintain it. It's level 1 and level 2 issues of repair and maintaining that vehicle. You should be able to do it yourself as a soldier, and that the department will only outsource the level 3 and level 4 repairs to the external contractors. And it is these external contractors sometimes that are coming in to transfer skills that might seen as paying workers or paying the contractors. Mostly people who come in to train other ground vehicles, aircrafts, and ships who are being engaged from time to time to assist, that instead of paying them as a service provider, we pay them as workers or as contractors. We are committed to improving the MSS and SMS performance agreements that we have. I think that most of it has improved, and the grievances, I think, since the establishment of Minister Ombuds, I think when it comes to present this panel report, you highlight the improvement in terms of us in resolving our grievances process. The MPEDS achievements, the MPEDS, they are done every September. So we have September 2014, which is in the book, and September 2015, which is last month, results are supposed to be out. I won't be embarrassed with the improvement, right? 2.5. We are not. So last year was 2.1. This year we are coming at 2.8. So we should improve really getting there slowly. And then the internal body capacity is greatly improved. I think now you have 69 in your staff. How many? 39. So we're now at 39, and I think that's a great deal of improvement. I think Quarter General has also noticed that. And in terms of the targets, the issue, this is where we're involved in right now. We are now doing our 2016-2017 annual performance plan. We have done the first round, and we have taken it to National Treasury. National Treasury, end of this month, will be giving us his feedback. So the targets, they change. There is a method behind identifying these indicators and targets. And sometimes, when we engage with the National Treasury, they come back to us, actually, and debate and argue and tell us that it's not acceptable that we're putting these targets. And so the final target that actually goes into our performance plan, under which the annual report is going to come up, is a negotiated and consulted process with the National Treasury. And then after that, in December, it's going to go to the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, DPME, which is in the presidency. They too come in and say, according to the MTSF, your targets are adequate, not adequate, remove them. So there is a method, there is a process It's not Secretary for Defense, I'm sorry, that's my target. No, no, it does not work like that. There is a scientific assessment and process that goes up. Okay. And then, just in question, is a recommendation. Our recommendation is really that which is here from the economic situation of the country, that no matter how much you go to National Treasury to ask for funding for the defense review implementation, the funds are just not there. It's not because the National Treasury does not like the Department of Defense or anything like that. It's just that the funds are not there available. I think we have made our case very, very strong for the National Treasury to feed and support the encourages that we have put forward. So we would recommend to the that the portfolio committee start the process to support us that the funds are generated from the United Nations peacekeeping operations during funds for the Department of Defense operations, because they are raised from Department of Defense operations. And that also the funds that the Department of Defense is able to generate from the obsolete assets like the land assets and the equipment, any funds that we are able to generate from the revenues of disposal of these obsolete assets, whether it's land or equipment, be ring-fenced for the Department of Defense. We're engaging with AMSCO right now, and AMSCO is telling us that if that provision was to be made by the National Treasury for us to keep the funds generated from the disposal of our obsolete assets, we will be able to finance the Department of Defense without asking for a penny from the fiscus. The Vietnamese Department of Defense is financed by Vietnamese military industries, including their telecom industry. If you go to Mozambique, their telecom mobile phone is run by Mobitel, which is a defense industry of Vietnam. And from those funds, they don't ask any penny from the fiscus. We think we can also do it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I've got elders here, like Honorable Bongo, they must well eat now, it's lunch. So, let's go to lunch, and then come back at 2 o'clock, and then we'll take council, then Council Control Board.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you. Lunch is somewhere.
Further regulations are regulations issued in terms of the Vietnam Act and the Countries Act, and the Minister is responsible for Arms Corps as the Minister of Military Veterans, Minister of Defence and Military Veterans. The Board of Directors is our counting authority. So within its mandate, Arms Corps' objectives are to meet the following requirements of the Department of Defence. Defense material needs, in other words, acquisition, technology development, research and development, test and evaluation, and effectively, efficiently, and economically in all cases above, and to adhere to accepted principles. In terms of performance of operation functions, one of our core competencies being acquisition, to report back for this last financial year, in terms of airborne systems, the Oryx project, communication and navigation systems on 24 of the planned 39 aircrafts were successfully upgraded and delivered. And then the ADOT and missile flight test campaigns were successfully completed of this. And this signifies the completion of the development phase. We expect to be in a delivery phase by February 2017. Now, maritime systems, the MECO A200 frigates, Class 209, NOD 1,400 submarines, and Superlinx maritime patrol helicopters were part of the Strategic Defense Acquisition Program. All three of these product systems have been delivered and successfully taken into use by the SAADF. What on the acquisition side, in terms of performance of operations, landward systems, new generation infantry combat vehicles. This was referred to earlier by one of the questioners to the Secretary of Defense. commonly known as Project Ambassador. We restructured the program to maximize local production. 21 vehicles were sourced from Pretoria in Finland, and 217 will be produced locally. Development is expected to be completed by the end of the 2016-17 financial year. Ground-based air defense systems, phase two of this system program, which entails upgrading of fire control systems of the 35mm anti-aircraft guns, is progressing well. And artillery target engagement systems, ATES, the system was commissioned and handed over to the SA Army Artillery Formation and has been taken into operation use. Common weapon systems, the new generation tactical communication systems, development of various communication elements progressing well, will be the first tactical communication system in the world providing complete interoperability between all elements of the battlefield, or commonly known as battle theater. Initial production orders for the complete communication system were placed during financial year, and the first production equipment will be delivered during the first quarter of next year. New generation static and mobile communication systems. The detailed design of the system has been contracted and will be completed during the 2015-16 financial year. Defense material disposal. You'll know that we are mandated to dispose of old equipment. Disposal of redundant and obsolete defense materials on behalf of the Department of Defense. We dispose of 14.1 million worth of redundant military stock, improvement of 173% on the previous financial year. And African countries have shown interest in acquiring surplus SAND equipment, the third as well for future sales. You will also know that the Secretary of Defense stuck to this income being ring-fenced and retained for certain projects, including the military veterans, and we are working on how we can establish that as an element of permanence in our business strategy. Technology management analysis, this obviously falls under research and development, also one of our core competencies. Management of technology development programs. We have a variety of partners, including the CSIR, and most of the universities and the South African defense industry. Major technology programs include the technology development of all-weather air defense missile to improve technology capabilities such as radar systems. The electronic warfare, or EW, radio frequency technology development program to manage large amounts of diverse electronic warfare data. Firepower technology development aimed at providing science and engineering knowledge to improve weapon systems. Radar technology development program to improve target detection, tracking, and classification. Optronics technology development program countermeasure development against infrared, and command and control development program to build and maintain capability in command and control. Innovation, management of intellectual property, in other words, IP created or acquired during acquisition of defense material on behalf of the DoD. In managing the IP, the division assisted DoD to obtain an unqualified audit on intangible assets from the Auditor General. And of course, we're looking to how one can commercialize some of the IP that is not sovereign or strategic. And you will know command and control for our industry. It's one of their biggest exports and one of the biggest exporters to India as we speak. And then, of course, we have our test and evaluation. Firstly, Gerotech, a fairly large, extensive area of land with special purpose infrastructure, covering about 500 hectares west of Pretoria. There we've received certification from South African Bureau of Standards, ISO 14001, which is essentially an environmental standard. The Occupational Health and Safety Advisory Services have awarded us an 18001 health and safety standard, and our commercial sales have attributed to 82% of the total sales versus 62% in the previous financial year. Then Alcan 1, which is our test range for weapon testing, both for the SANDF and for friendly forces. In this case, we've had a significant increase in the number of tests conducted. You'll know that Alcan 1 has over 85,000 hectares, so it's ideal for many different forms of weapon testing. contributing 39% in planned sales, and international clients contributed 65% of the total sales for Alcampa. Of course, both facilities have massive capital investment requirements, upgrades, and currently our budgets don't allow us to do justice to that. Performance of operational functions. In terms of scientific and operational research there on armor development, developing low collateral damage armor packages that can be attached to any type of vehicle. The system is in design and in the testing phase. Pro-Technique acquired new solid phase gas chromatographic Fourier transform infrared spectrometer to enhance the analytical capabilities for the verification of chemical weapons convention. 89% of sales from DoD and 9.5% from the commercial sector. And armor development, I forgot to mention that 6.5% is from Defense Research and Development Board. So it's a special board that sits and allocates where the necessary funding goes for research and what the key programs are. HAZMAT, which is essentially in a special biological warfare mask program where we produce and sell masks across the country, but to the private sector and the mining sector in particular, but also for the Defense Force. Actual sales of the period under review, 13 million exceeded the budgeted sales by 21%. Defense Decision Support Institute, DDSI, you will all know that they have a defense analytical capability, ranging from logistics right through to planning and strategy, and have obviously assisted greatly with the defense review, and are used in a variety of departments within the SNI. And what we call Flamingo completed the missile plume analysis for an on-school project, and the results were delivered successfully, currently involved in 4 Defense Research and Development Board-funded projects. Operational and Scientific Research, the Institute of Maritime Technology, which is just down the road in Simonstown, was a part of Arms Corps, specializes in defense research, development, testing, and evaluation of maritime systems. 61.4% sales were from the DoD, and of course, all other sales were achieved through the ultrasonic broken rail detector product, which is the main contributor to commercial sales. And you'll know that the product picks up a fracture in the railway line. It was originally produced for the submariner sector, but is utilized now in the commercial sector in collaboration currently with Transit. And we are negotiating with an Indian company to harness and use the product in India as well. Planned and unplanned maintenance project, the frigate SS Mendi, which is still not complete as a result of funding challenges. Patrol vessels, SS Isak Joba, SS Galashewa, and SS Mplosi have all been either completed or almost completed, and then tug Chukudu, the project was successfully completed in March 2015. The dockyard, as you know, you asked a question about it earlier, so I'll speak to that now. The dockyard, in our view, isn't part of our core competency. It's an agency of service delivery with highly technical capability. And in our view, the funding metrics involved with the dockyard is a serious challenge. The figures mooted or estimated for a proper upgrade of the dockyard are in order of a capital budget of 1 billion rand, and a further, let's call it operational budget of a minimum of 1 billion rand per annum. The current budget is in the order of 200 million, so that's 10% of the requirement. We have formed a project team, a seamless integrated team. That team has now completed a process of proposal to the minister, via PDSC, the Military Command Council, the Secretariat Council, as well as the Council on Defence. The intent is to transfer the dockyard to Denel. We are negotiating based on a number of conditions as set out by the Minister, which include certain approvals from Treasury as well as capital adequacy, and they would obviously need to look at how they capitalize that project, that it would be better suited within their realm of activity. So that process is underway, provisionally approved by the Council of Defence, and we are now in the process of hardcore negotiations with FNL. Arms Corps has been set up as the contracting party on behalf of the Department of Defence, so we will facilitate the contracting with FNL, and we're in the process of looking at minute technical detail on that. The intent is to deliver within the next financial year on that transfer. Planned and unplanned maintenance at the dockyard, submarines, SS Mantatisi. The refit progressed satisfactorily and was successfully completed in October last year. SS Charlotte Makleke. The vessel has been formally handed over to the dockyard to commence the refit. And SS Queen Mujaji. The project was successfully completed in February 2015 and the vessel is operational. Independent vessels such as the SAS Harkensburg, the project plan was revived and to additional work. The project was completed in July 2015. Sorry, sir.
Why do you call them independent vessels?
I'll have to ask Mr. Guduka to inform me on that.
I think it's more in terms used in terms of support vessel, not your core frigate or submarine. That's basically what the terms assigned to them. It's a part of the support vessels, not your core fighter vessels, per se. More to support the main fighter vessels. That is your frigates and submarines.
The Drakenbach, is it the Drakenbach?
Pardon?
Is it a replenisher?
To support vessel.
The Drakenbach.
Drakenbach?
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
You talk of the replenisher in the Navy.
It's more used as a support vessel to your other vessels, like your frigates, your submarines, to support them when they're operationally deployed.
Chair, roughly, I think we will call them independent ships because they're not in the combat environment. They are like the Ragensberg, is our logistical ship, is the one which takes to support other ships, such as, you know, remember the issue of the rotor and take them during the electricity crisis. Is the one which we sent the France to go and fill that 210 itself to bring it to the looking ground. Yeah, even in sea lift capability, you can use it also in sea lift, you know, taking goods to another harbor and so forth. And normally we also use it for fuel storage. The Protea is also an independent ship because the primary responsibility of Protea is the navigation of our oceans. It's the one which is in charge of drawing the cash. And we do this on behalf of Mozambique and often we do it also for Namibia and Angola at the time. So that is the environment. So they don't normally wear a warship flag.
Okay. No, thank you very much. I just want to ask members to be clarified on that one.
Okay.
Over to you, CEO.
And then finally, Asia is Persia. The project was planned to be completed in April 2015 and was completed on time. On the human resources side, our target was to have 64% black employees. We've achieved 71.1% in the last financial year. Improvement in employee satisfaction survey from 64.5 to 67.7. And succession planning, 174 successors have been identified versus 153 positions. So we have a slight overflow of successors, which is always good because you may lose people as other employers steal them from time to time. On the skills development side, management leadership program, 21 managers attending a program at WITS and 7 at UNISA. International training programs, 6 employees studying in the US, and adult education and training programs, 24 employees registered for grade 12 versus 2 in the previous year. Arms Corps is currently providing 25 undergraduates of fisheries. And just in terms of our corporate goals, a number of goals there, goal 1 to 3, measured effectiveness of acquisition function in terms of contracts to be placed and a commitment to funds, achieved cash flow against formally planned cash flow. In other words, All of these objectives were achieved. Goal 4, we achieved 78.7 days versus the 90 days in terms of the residual placement. Goal 5, management of defense industrial participation, execution of our DIP obligations. We objective partially achieved at 95.8%. Goal 6, management of execution of defense technology test evaluation requirements of the DoD. Execution of Arms for Defense Institute of Contractual Milestones and Deliverables. There we achieved 98.6 versus 90%. Goal 7, dockyard management of performance against dockyard mandate objectives all achieved. And then under strategic objectives, the first one, funding and growth, which of course is becoming one of our biggest challenges. Measure expenditure compliance and efforts to secure sufficient funding to sustain organizations. The objective was achieved. You will name this financial that we've had $381 million taken with our budget, but we expected to deliver on the same mandate, and hence we're looking at a whole variety of funding innovations in collaboration with our clients, being the Department of Defense. Strategic objective, fit people and capabilities, measuring ability to attract and retain employees through a positive organizational environment, objective achieved. Objective 3, organizational effectiveness and efficiencies. Some objectives achieved, while others not achieved, and some partially achieved. And strategic objective 4, stakeholder relationships. And yeah, I must commend the board who brought in a whole variety of interventions which stabilized the entire environment of stakeholders. Measurement of stakeholder relationships and compliance, good governance, objectives achieved with one achieved later than planned. And corporate social investment, you will probably remember that we have an upliftment project in Prista, also involving the provision of IT infrastructure and IT, let's call it remedial type action, as well as training. That project is well underway and completed. And then take a Build Child to Work campaign. There we collaborated with CELC. Mandela Day every year is a big day for us, and we run a variety of activities throughout the country. Military veterans, we see this as a very important area of focus. In the last financial year, a committee was set up in terms of the Act, focusing in on 4 crucial areas: economic empowerment, skills development, social investment, and employment. And we will be able to report much more in this financial year on what has been achieved there. Just in terms of our financial performance, you will see that there is between 2014 and 2015 an expected drop in net profit. Part of that is due to the medical payouts. Our staff opted to take a cash payout, and the company therefore doesn't have an increasing liability going forward in terms of a defined benefit rather than a defined contribution. And then the net value of the group has climbed a bit as a result of increased sales. And there you'll see just an idea of the group financial structure. Statement of financial position, 2014 versus 15, and then a breakdown in different areas, R&D, dockyard, corporate, and NDF. Now, achievements, Geotech receiving 2 very important accreditations in terms of the South African Bureau of Standards. The highest percentage of cash paid, 8.8% against orders, best result for the past 6 years. Armscore achieved level 2 BBBEE rating from level 3 in the previous year. And Armscore has achieved a clean audit report. And there is our chairman, part of the EXCO, receiving the award from the Auditor General a week ago. Thank you, Chair.
I'm sure you also want the portfolio committee to give you an award. Thank you very much. As we're saying, I'm still not difficult.
We are getting a lead audit. We're getting lead audit at the time. Can we engage with the report? Your corporate social investment. What informs it? You'll answer that, CEO. Honorable Issa.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if I missed it, the CAO responded on the changes to the hydrographic visions, because the bill we can also address soon. The other one is, of course, just a response to the defense, the DIP, and the outstanding one that is due by 2016 of MBDA, where there's about 946 million outstanding on that DIP. And there was a new DIP agreement also signed in 2015, and we just have an idea of the value and the status of that DIP. Concerning research and development, I didn't pick up the issue of the VisionNet Maritime Domain Awareness Software, the development in that regard, and also the submarine tower asset, and then electrical field shock protector. And then, of course, the issue of aging trigger digital skills, that's into the domain training of people, which is excellent, to fill the gap when others are leaving due to addition. And I think this is very important. We have a serious problem with some of the other departments, including defense in that regard. Here, there's got an overgrowing of people that successes to cause which we can learn from. The other one is that, is this the case that the minister has said that Dockyard will move to Danao? And is it not maybe also, again, had another report say that it will revert back to SAD or the SA Navy? Is the current status as in now that we're going to move to Danao, and of course there will be cooperation with on school, not the reconsideration to go back to what you say, South African Navy. And how does this impact also on the issue of the modernization strategy, which was discussed for the last 2 or 3 years already regarding this matter? The one is that the doctor is also training artisans. It's a special artisan skills program, and they've only trained 19. Out of 50, why were not more people trained at the dockyard or in the capacity, or it was actually planned for more? Then, of course, from the student training that we have on the SA Navy that's taking place at the dockyard, the skills development in line with the needs of on school and also the defense itself, has that been managed, and how is that taking shape with the particular students that have been now basically recruited for that purpose? The maintenance of vessels, I'm happy to see the progress. That's also because of the very maintenance that was not done speedily, that also multinational or international exercises were also delayed. And then, of course, we know that it also impeded on the performance of the sea hours that our Navy or the soldiers in the defense of the Navy had practiced and were used those boats for, because the boats were actually in for repairs. So we can actually see the time frames there that many of the actual boats and vessels were actually in dock, and they were refurbishing and repairing the vessels. Maybe just an update from the Armsport side is the plan of Durban also being one of the major bases. We were up at Richards Bay, and of course we hear about the expansion taking place on that side, and also where the maritime training and facilities will be improved tremendously. And the other one is the... we've seen the short-term first intelligence initiatives, and that versus the ERP that had to be introduced. What is the status of that at the moment? Because the ERP 10 has also been cancelled, and it was re-advertised. What's the position on that, and also the delay that is, of course, in the performance or the anti-ICT services of on school? There's also been a service catalog that was adopted. Has that been concluded? It's now with the minister. Has it been returned? And then we have here also the reduction in the group's total comprehensive income. And I think that was a concern that at the last meeting we saw deficit, and there was an appeal for funding from the department or from national budget. And of course, we know that OMSCO will make a plan to make ends meet. Although they say there's a deficit, they will make plans. But here we see there is definitely a decline in the comprehensive income, and are our measures being put in place to be able to sustain and to grow that income, the revenue base, so that that will decrease further. There's also issue of other income. Just to give some evidence, on the other income which decreased from 136 million to 78 million. I'll move on quickly. I think even though we have a clean audit, there's always three concerns raised by the AG, and I think Omsko can just explain. One was compliance, one was the IT, and one was management procurement, which specifically referred to contracts. The area that we're always concerned about for fraud and corruption, that proper procedures are followed, and also the different committees are established to ensure the adjudication, evaluation, etc., the bid committees. The four KPIs that was also an issue is, of course, the implementation plan for the dockyard itself, but now with the now being also a factor, how will that be dealt with? Then business initiatives issue. And the ICT and, of course, the ERP core models. That was also of the concerns raised by the AG. The medical liability has been explained. I think we accept that. And then, of course, we have two legal cases that we spoke about before that have been coming on since 2008, particularly the and then the NGAM, where we're looking at 192 million euros. What is the status of that case? And, the interdict, I think, that was supposed to go through. The legal expenditure, we see a minimum year of 34.5, which is in conflict with the triple B claim, and of course the matter has been referred to National Vision, awaiting the outcome. Is there an outcome from National Vision? Thank you very much, sir.
Another comment or question, Honorable Didi Gamede.
I wish to appreciate the presentation. Just a few as a matter of interest. The training, something that is about training, and the training that takes place in the US, international training. What type of training is that? The second issue is on your CSI. I think last year we raised, we had a presentation even from the dockyard, that when they reported that they had an MOU with the Department of Education in the Western Cape, and we raised an issue that then that as unintentionally excludes other learners from other provinces. Because AMSCO is part of the South African campaign, and they must service the whole country. Now I see now Gauteng that you partner with Gauteng Department. What about other provinces benefiting from your CSI? You know, people need to know, people from Matikulu must know that there is AMSCO somewhere. So AMSCO is doing something here and in all the other rural areas. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Well done. Okay. Over to you, CEO. Over to you, Chairperson.
Okay, so just in terms of Project Biro, as mentioned by you earlier, Project Biro closed on the 30th of September in terms of bids, and that process of adjudication obviously is underway. So we can't say much more than that at this stage. in terms of the modernization requirements of the dockyard, there's an extensive shopping list in relation to the dockyard. I'll ask Mr. Kaduka if you need more detail on what that modernization would include. But it involves the replacement of much of the equipment, the upgrade, and even some of the, it's called a fixed infrastructure. Some of it's over 110 years old. So one really needs to put, and the estimate price, as I said on that, was in excess of R1 billion. I'm going to ask Mr. Mnazi to respond on the Defence Industrial Programme, or DIP, just in terms of where it's standing. We have instituted the proactive DIP approach as well, and then I'll speak to a little bit on defense, on the defense industry strategy and the process which has begun. So Mr. Mkwanazi, if you could speak to that.
Thank you, honorable members. The defense industrial participation, which is now called DIP, the one that has been referred to as outstanding, that is as a result of what the MDDA was supposed to fulfill as an obligation. When we bought some missiles, there was an offset agreement that we needed to have with MDDA. That process has taken a lot of time, especially because what they came up with in terms of the plan, it could not be implemented. So they were offering us a test bench, but the test bench that they're offering us is a block 3, meaning that it's a higher level to the missiles that we were in possession of, where our missiles are at block 2. So now there's this discussion now in terms of this block 3 versus block 2. What it means is that if we're to use that test bench, we'll have to upgrade our missiles from block 2 to block 3 at an exorbitant cost, which we can't afford. So we can't afford to utilize that bench. So we're not discussing with them in terms of looking at other opportunities of being able to discharge the IP. Coming to the 40.1 or so million grants that we signed this current in the financial year under review, it's composed of a number of offsets coming from different programs, but mainly it's offsets that will be coming from the upgrade of the air defense system, the GDS project, which is the upgrading of the gun system. So that's where the area of the majority of the deep are coming from. Plus then the number of all those others that we actually acquire from overseas, and the amount that we are acquiring from overseas is $2 million, then it warrants that we get offsets.
Understood. And as you can just also talk to the domain awareness, as well as the shock detectors, and then I'll come on industrial structure.
So the question repeated on the domain awareness.
The status of that particular software, what is the status? Because it's called under the Institute for Maritime Technology, so there were a number of initiatives that were taken. Just to update the committee on that.
The program is still taking its technology project, so it has not been finalized. We're still working on that project of domain and awareness. It is an issue that it will take a bit of time because it's quite a broader project in terms of technology. So that is still on, it's not yet completed.
One on the submarine escape, the power escape, and the electrical field shock protector, same status.
Yeah, same status, yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Just on, let's call it, you spoke about industrial strategy. we've initiated a process involving the client, the DOD, together with the Department of Trade and Industry, specifically their role on designated areas in the defense sector, as well as other collaborative type institutions like the CSR, DNL, AMD. That process formally began a journey about 3 weeks ago. The type of issues that we are looking at would firstly be designated sectors or subsectors. The other one would be a clear definition on sovereign capability, strategic capability, being two separate areas, as well as policy around localization, broad-based black economic empowerment, indigenous design. So ensuring that we capture as much of the spend as possible within South Africa, whilst acknowledging that you can't always fulfill everything in terms of the value chain, but ensuring that you fulfill as much as you can to generate economic activity in the defense sector locally, and of course, to look at how one can harness even the peace dividends in Africa. In other words, the contribution of peace and stability in Africa, and where we can collaborate with other African countries around purchasing and acquisition and research and development as well. So it goes beyond the borders of South Africa, but it speaks to the broader continent and the SADC area. Just on the HR matters raised around student training, as well as a variety of other issues in relation to HR, I'm going to ask Mr. Mbada, our general manager HR, to respond to that.
Thanks, Jen. You know, I'd like to respond especially to the question that you asked, to what informs our CSI. About 4 years ago, as Expo, we took a decision to say our core business is largely driven by skills development. I mean, we are a people-oriented organization. You know, we require engineers, scientists. And for us, we then said, that's what we're good at. So our emphasis should talk around initiatives to try and ensure that we uplift the skills of the community, of the children at large. So what we then did, we started to partner with the schools across the country. We started on a budget of about 200,000, but as we speak, we have grown that budget. And our focus has always been to try and have a footprint across Africa. We have a number of initiatives that talk to our skills agenda. For an example, we've worked in the past, I think, 2 years with schools around KZN, where we had huge exhibitions on career training in Manda. We attracted about 3,000 students. And out of those students, those who really perform well are part of our FASA program. You go to the Eastern Cape, and we link the initiative in the Eastern Cape with the requirements of the dockyard, where we realize that the Eastern Cape, they possess quite a huge, you know, auto industry, which are some of the skills that we require for the dockyard. So we visited the technical colleges in the TE area, where as we speak now, we've got students at the technical college that are fully funded by us. I think it's a group of about 15. Coming to the Western Cape, in line with the strategy of actually trying to get more artisans to the dockyard, we visited 16 high schools in around the townships of Cape Town. But what we realized as well was that the profile of and the demographics highlighted that either there is lack of awareness of some of the professions within the defense industry amongst the children from previously disadvantaged backgrounds. So we engage the schools, the principals. We will obviously report in the next financial year, but I'm happy to report that we had a very successful event about a week ago at the dockyard, where we have about 5 schools in and around the Cape. We attracted about 500 students with an intention that they can start planning their careers, and obviously we'll give them an ongoing support. So those are some of the initiatives that we've had. And we've had successful stories as well in other areas. But in short, our CSI is largely driven towards skills development. But having said that, we also work with other, with education department in particular. But it's like we always assess, obviously, when we get these requests, because it's not easy to turn down some of these initiatives, because we talk to other, you know, developmental challenges that we're facing. So although we do tend to deviate here and there, but our emphasis is to work with schools, is to work with tertiary institutions. And I think we will be reaching out in the case of an area. But it's just that also we have limited resources in as far as personnel to try and cover all the areas. But there are plans going forward that we'll have to, you know, tap into those other regions. So it's to ensure that we give everyone a fair opportunity. On the issue of the artisans at the dockyard, the 19 that you are referring to, Honorable Member, we started the program with 6 artisan or apprentice trainees about 3 years ago. I'm happy to report that over the last 3 years, we have produced about in excess of about 50 artisans coming from those initiatives. Currently, they've got a total component of about 54
students. Half of that, I can safely say, they are coming from the townships in Cape Town. And the rest is a balance from with our partnerships with other state or institutions, and also some of the students, 15 that are in Port Elizabeth. So that's the total complement. Our target is always to have 50, you know, students at any given time. So as the once qualified, we replenish. But at any given time, we have about 50 apprentice training.
You are plowing the program, the CSR. I reckon that members are from communities and they've got constituencies. I think they must feel you there. You must make sure that you feel you there.
Yes, through you, Chair. I just wanted to remind the members that next year we are hosting AAD, and as part of the activities of AAD, we do organize exposure to new technology or technology in general to schools from disadvantaged backgrounds. Over the years, the focus has been on schools around Pretoria or Gauteng. But we have agreed that for next year we will try and go all out. I don't think we plan to bring the whole classes from where I come from, Matikul. But we will try and look at other areas and maybe bring the best students of mathematics from the level of grade 10 to grade 12. Because those students are already showing a potential, and when we show them a missile, I hope not, they will understand the language, where you go into with that. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Through you, Chair, just to respond also on that question of why the United States of America. We identified as part of developing some of our engineers in a very specialized environment. As part of our strategic development, we identified certain skills that are required. And some of them we could not find them in South Africa in terms of the universities, like the naval architects and things like that. So we selected those particular skills that are not available in some of the universities. They tend to specialize because in the overseas you tend to find that some of the universities are not just doing engineering in general and mechanics, but they specialize in a certain technology. If it's electronics, for instance, they specialize in radar. And if you want to have a radar specialist, it's better to send that person to that particular institute where he's going to get that skill that we require. And we have identified those skills as critical, and we don't have them in view of the fact that to those that have them, they'll soon be going into retirement. So to frustrate that process, we have to send them to America.
Thank you very much. Any other things, CEO?
Chair, I just would like Mr. Mbada to, not Mr. Mbada, Mr. Kutuka, to respond to what is the plan for the Durban element of the dockyard. I think that is a very specific question.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Honorable members, I think the whole dockyard strategy, the primary focus is on the dockyard in Simon Sound. However, the Salisbury Island forms also part of the whole solution. So the whole revitalization will be also exploiting opportunities in that regard to say if for recapitalization in line with Navy strategies as well of expanding the base going forward. So primary focus will be on the Simonstown, but with Dock and Salisbury Island as well, big look in one of the areas to be utilized for commercial opportunities.
I'd like to ask the CFO to respond to the issues relating to compliance and those issues highlighted by the AG.
Thank you, Jay. I think the in terms of the compliance issues raised by the AG, it all reflects towards the procurement policy that Armscor applied in the previous year regarding the 25% black equity that we required. So that policy was then stopped in September, and therefore the AG then accepted our principles that you also have to follow through, and that's the regular expenditure also reflected in hospital's financials. It's the orders placed before that period Well, we still have that saving coming through in the following years. But that policy was stopped, and that was the concept that IGC might regard procurement and management of procurement activities.
Chair, just on that, to say we had a meeting with the Accountant General. We pointed out the risk in terms of the backwash relating to that in the first instance. The second instance, we applied for condonement going back to avert that risk, because every man and his dog will be wanting to litigate against us. And secondly, we've asked for exemption going forward, which has been denied by the Minister of Finance in a letter to our minister. So we are relooking at that entire process. Currently, our view is that the Preferential Procurement Act, as it stands, is debilitating and is not assisting us in being, let's call it, broadening economic participation in the economy, and it is not sufficiently progressive for us to get our jobs done in terms of what's expected of us in those very communities that Jay is referring to. In terms of our funding, let's be brutally honest, because you asked us to be, so I'm going to be frank with you. Our current mandate hasn't changed, but our funding has been reduced in terms of our, let's call it, legislative transfer from the department to OMSCO. It's been essentially reduced not by the client, but by National Treasury. The expectation of Treasury is for us to dig into our reserves. This year we run into the red in terms of income versus expenditure in the month of November, which is around the corner. We then start digging into our reserves. We dig into our reserves for 2 years, as said, that after that we reevaluate. But we run out of reserves based on current trend line by 2019. So technically, if we don't do something radical, we are in deep trouble. My view is that, and it is the view of EXCO and the board, that the talent and institutional memory consisting of engineers and scientists and some of the best brains in the country at all levels and all ages and all races, you'll see we're 70% black as an organization. It would be a great disservice to this country if we should start laying off people in order to meet up our expenditure budget. So the intent is to generate income, and in this regard, the Secretary of Defense made mention of it. It's part of our strategy. But our business arm, which has a disposal competency as we speak, but we have a lot of other business acumen as well, the intent is to develop the business arm of OMSCO in order to assist the client in the DoD, to raise the necessary capital through disposals, through concessions, through triple P's, through lease and sale, or buy to lease, through property developments, through redundant equipment, whatever it is. And the intent is to generate a handling fee and to have that money ring-fenced for the implementation of the defense review. And this is obviously still in deliberation. We've taken it through the Plenary Defence Secretariat Council. It goes now to the Council on Defence, and then we'll present hopefully to you, Chair, and your Honourable Committee. But if we get that through, and we believe there is a chance, we'll require certain exemptions. For instance, land is a burning issue. We can't just dispense of land to anybody. It's got to go to people who have been previously disadvantaged. So the land would go through a typical EE code type process to level 2 and level 1 companies on the disposition or disposal of land, and then secondly on the investment of that capital in the defense industry through an acquisition process. For the defense review, the intent would be to expend that money locally and to spend it to companies with the requisite EE accreditation. And of course, we would ask cabinet for special disposition. So if we don't, and we don't seem to be able to receive the necessary exemption and condonement from National Treasury, our route will be to take it to the cabinet for special dispensation. But that would be entirely up to the minister and her council on defence as to what road they wish to take. In formal discussions with the leadership across the spectrum, the feeling is there's a definite need for a special dispensation for the defence force and ensuring that they can get boots on the ground and that they can walk with their time with dignity. And that would require a very, very new and novel approach to funding probably one of the best policy documents that have ever been produced by the defence force, being the Defence Review and a commission that produced it. So that's where we stand, Chair. And we're very committed to making it happen without sacrificing any of the principles that we stand for. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You done. You responded to every question, I guess.
The one on the litigations.
Okay. Mr. Kunal?
Mr. Kunal, and perhaps the CFO as well, he's acquainted with the costs.
Okay. Okay. The one on Beverly Hills, as you realize, that it's a case that took place in the 80s. Our concern was the fact that, in view of the fact that we're still waiting for the date and what. The witnesses were getting old and some of them were passing on. So we agreed through the court order that evidence taken, that was done at the end, by the end of March in South Africa. So all the evidence has been taken. So what we are waiting for now is it's a date in court in the place in Portugal where this litigation is taken. In terms of the MCAM, which is it's a case of about 6.1 million rands. On that one, although the court ruled in our favor, and we had a court order of that, sorry that we get our money back from the company would lose some of their own money and was still trying to pursue that matter, but the company is insolvent. So this is the challenge that we are faced with in terms of that particular one. But in terms of the court ruling, the court ruled in our favor.
Thank you very much. We are done. CEO, Chairperson, I think you've got a good team that complements each other. And we'll encourage that you keep it up that way. You utilize every member in your management, you utilize the board. This is optimal utilization. I think you need to keep it up that way. Thank you very much. That's good leadership. We are moving to Castle Cost for about immediately. Castle, she looked tired.
So will you excuse us?
Yeah, you may go.
Thank you.
There we go.
honorable members. Castle Patrol Board, I know that you are very fit to speak to the point that we have. What is your OTT opinion this financial year? And further? Not in yet. That's fine. It's a good try. Eh? Over to you, Gerard.
Thank you, honorable chair, members of the committee. I think we've started with all the complex, you know, the defense programs that we're doing from the Secretary of Defense to sophisticated prime minister equipment of arms corps. Now we're going to be talking to your soul now, you know, because we are focusing on shaping attitudes, perceptions, and building a stable future, which is what the hassle is there for. Chair, we did have a listening and unqualified the audit opinion. The aim was to have a clean audit, except for two findings by the Auditor General, but we are still committed that this current year 2016, we are going to be able to get a clean audit. In fact, we are so certain that we can't wait, you know, the end of the financial year. The presentation will be done by the Executive Director, Calvin Kibelen, and I will hand over to you now. Calvin.
Thank you so much. Sorry, this is the afternoon, evening, I must wake you up, but yeah, thanks. First of all, Chair, thank you, and thank you to honorable members. And apologies for the little bit of miscommunication, because this meeting was originally scheduled for the castle. But due to the renovations, and in fact what the chairperson was speaking to now, I don't know, some of you are maybe old enough to remember the classic film on slavery ever been made, which is a root series of the 70s. No? It's been reproduced, and one of the episodes is currently being filmed at the castle as we speak here. That's why we are all here. It would have been nice every year to see how. What is this? Danny Glover and these guys run around on the castle, but it is, you know, that things happening. So I want to express a vote of thanks to you for your unwavering support. Then also to the entire board. The board are not here to support me only morally and to be the photos of the public camera, but each of them play a very critical part. And we have rest of both the ministry, the deputy minister and the minister, and the kind of support and guidance that we get from them. Seeing that the castle is on the eve of very significant developments, the 350-year commemoration, the renovations that will be finished next year, the whole memorialization projects we have on for military veterans and for people from Khoi San and all of this. And so I think it's very important we need those support. Because if you look at our financials, the 6.2 million budget, we'll not do all of these things. So if the Department of Public Works were there, do not chip in all the work that they do, General Materials and the regional works, but if they don't chip in, this 6.2 million will not be able to do that. So we're probably talking about a 6.2 million multiplied by 3 with all partners and the support and the real work that they do, because I always say real work is work that's not on presentations or in pictures, in words, but that you can take on pictures. So thank for that. I'll go through that because that's the brief that we've been given. So the 6.2 million budget, I've just pulled out some comparative figures for last year, because the big one is probably the top one. We moved from 1.7 million on salaries to 3.0 on that, but I'll come to that later when we deal with HR. Our second biggest item here, for instance, is the audit fees. So I was looking at my two colleagues before, how they speak about 42 billion, and people speak about that, and they speak about missiles and about independent votes and stuff, and we talk about 6.2, but the impact that votes have in the society is also important, so I think that's the point that the general wanted to make here. And then we have increased in the special open days. We were talking about social responsibility. I think every special day, starting with maybe the 2nd of January, the 11th of February when Mandela was released, all of those days, we could be regarded as our social responsibility days, because we then under those days the castle is not only free, but we have memorialization programs, heritage programs for people who would ordinarily not be able to afford the 15 rand or the 30 rand to come to the castle. And the goodwill that you unlock, not only through media coverage, but through buying in from communities, is I think that what we're going to need when we go into the next year and 50 years of the castle. This was Heritage Day last year, and this, in fact, this year, so we have two Heritage Days because of the reporting cycle. Last year, we had, I reported in the last engagement 10,000 people in the castle, the historic first. This year, we had 5.5. You must remember it was Eid. One of the Muslim holiday was on the same day, so there were, it's a sizable portion of community around the castle that was in there, but still significant these days. Moving straight into the program, Jefferson, I don't know if you can read, but you have the slide in front of you, but untarget or over-target, so there were no funding there in terms of underperformance. In the second program, we're dealing with the preservation, interpretation, and showcasing of the history of the castle, also no issue around performance, except for, and the general is referring to that, the Auditor General has problems. If you look at the second column, he had a problem with the way that we mixed quantitative indicator language with qualitative indicator language. So he was happy that we put new and innovative in our targets. Because they were saying, what do you mean by new? So I said to him, when you go to the previous year, it's new. What do you mean by innovative? I said, there's an element of renewal, ICT, or whatever in here. But by the way, we have accepted that we're not going to be present with the AG, we will correct it. And for this year, because it's still in Virgin APP, we will just write a, what we call a technical descriptor indicator for the AG so that we are covered in terms of that. So that was the one issue that the Auditor General had problems with. Not for the targets or reaching the targets of performance, but just the way that indicator was articulated in the APP. And this is, by the way, we engaged Treasury in the department's planning department around it, and they didn't have a problem with that. But that's, we will deal with that when it comes again. Program 3 deals with the tourism potential. I think here we've done very well, given that but there was no innovation, the planning for the innovation started. We, in terms of our target, and we must also remember that these targets are set over at MTF. So these targets were based on previous year and based on the previous year. So our target, we plan to have 150,000 visitors through our doors, and we managed to achieve 168,000. Now the reason why we don't in next deliverable, you know, they have a radical increase in monetary value debt, and lots of it was either kids, well, the school groups, we charge them 5 rand if they come in a tour group. So we've seen a massive increase in school groups coming. So that, because we charge them 5 rand, the 15 rand normally that we charge for a kid, they will normally, you know, that why it should reflect in our finance performance. Then last program is to deal with the public image of the castle, meaning as the general said, the soul of our country. And there we're measuring that on the year-on-year increase in the number of people who reach through media coverage. And I must say that media, not only the SABC, the print media, the online media, independent media just had a field day with the castle. The kind of programs that we offered at the castle, Women's Day and Youth Day, all of that, that every time we got very well, you know, a good coverage in terms of media, especially electronic radio and TV coverage. Because if you, just for example, Chairperson, if you on all the radio stations or on all the TV stations, news stations, on one day, you reach 24 million people on a day. So that's the extent of our audience, not people, but an audience of 24 million. And we, obviously, this is done by independent media monitoring company. So I went over that and I think that is fine. The second issue that the general was talking about is the bottom line. They also said that we're mixing the quantitative, the qualitative, the number of successful community educational and heritage programs. They say we must take out the word successful because it's a quantitative indicator. But it's neither here nor there for me, but we are fine with it. We will correct it in the current year. Just quickly, in terms of what you've asked us about the programs that require more funding, but it's not funding. Most of this funding we can either get internally through the SERPTA funding, or we can get it through our partners that I've spoken about earlier. And maybe I can quickly talk about some of them. The FENS, last year, I remember the committee was talking about the informal settlers around Strand Street, the informal housing people who lived under the bridge. Through Colonel Mongo, who is sitting in this meeting, and other role players, even the city, involving the city, the CID, the SAP, the people were removed, and the temporary fence there, so they're now in the process of a more permanent heritage-friendly fence around the area, which will of course go through that. So I'm confident that even although we less this as maybe require more funding, we'll be able to find the necessary support internally or through our partners for this. Then I've highlighted those areas in the first one, dealing with our performance indicators. The second finding that the Auditor General raised, and some of the veterans in this committee will remember that in the past we didn't have an internal audit function. Now we have now appointed the internal audit function, but we only appointed them for 2 years. So there was only a 2-year own plan. So the Auditor General said, no, there should be a 3-year own plan. Then they also say there should be a signed audit charter, and although the board has approved the audit charter by board resolution, they want to see each other's signature on there. So it's more technical, technical non-compliance issues, but I'm sure a good dose of washing through this, and they will be clean when we come next year to this committee. Then some of the challenges, the human resource component, I think we're almost there. We've lost, I think last year we reported that we've recruited the tourism manager. We also had the researcher, and we've lost both of them in this year. But in the meantime, the Department Integrated Management Services has a little structure. They've come up with a recommendation, and I think at tomorrow and the next board meeting, we'll move forward in terms of getting those efforts out so that we fill those key critical positions and deal with the human resource challenges. Then the reports of conservation management, I've spoken about that and how we partnerships to do that. We have completed the commercialization strategy, and some of the elements, if it wasn't for the renovations, would have been rolled out. We've already addressed the issue of the restaurant, but I think there are many elements that can immediately unlock resources if they are implemented after the renovations. I needless to say there's massive interest from filming companies, from events companies to have events there. But of course you need to strike the balance. You can't have an event every weekend, make a 50,000, 100,000 every weekend, but then the impact of that in terms of noise pollution, in terms of other kinds of impact on these site mechanisms. So that's why we call it a responsible commercialization strategy. Marketing promotion, we will be addressing that. And then some of your questions that you've asked us in the previous sessions, I have circulated this to you. We have spoken about the high cost of conservation management, and I've said there we have MOUs, we've signed now the MOU with the Department of Military Veterans. We have a MOU signed with Regional Works Regiment, so earlier you've heard the work that they've done. So I think because the council is a joint responsibility of the departments, I think we rely on all the partners to stay committed in the long run so that we manage the cargo as the international iconic heritage site as it is. Then the conference facility, there's also progress there. We've done the costing for that. And through Defense Endowment Properties and that process, there will be a procurement process to deal with the establishment for the first time of a conference facility. So let's hope and pray that maybe we'll have this meeting in proper air-conditioned facilities on the top floor of the castle next year, because there will be enough to take people off. Then the relationship and servicing of military veterans, I think also they've said we signed the MOU. We, in the 350,000 applications for internships, we have out of that appointed some relatives or dependents of military veterans as interns. We've also offered temporary employment to 4 military veterans. Now with the renovations, military academies to infect. So although it's temporary employment, it at least relieves the burden of four families. And I'm sure as we implement MOU, we will be able to do more of this within our mandate. You know, UNESCO World Heritage Status, I've engaged the SARA CEO, who is now pushing his staff to parallel to the all the research that you have to do for UNESCO World Heritage Status, they also do it for national listing, because the castle is, although it's a national monument, it's still not a national heritage site in terms of the of National Heritage Resources Management Act. So the CEO and I met in this process to fast track it in time for the 350-year commemoration. I've spoken about commercialization drive. I won't go into that. The SMM beneficiation from the renovations. Very needless to say, because the project is managed by GPW and implemented by a private company, in every month meeting, we ask them to report their candidates and all that. They bring in SMEs. It's not entirely out of control. We are more lobbying for them to include beneficiation for SMEs in this big project. Then there's a consultant you asked me about. There were only two consultants that we've used, and that's the ICT service provider and the commercialization study. And in both cases, they're in the contract elements of transfer of skills are built in, although, you know, I work with the service, the ICT service provider. I prefer not to be skilled in this area. There are other skills I can develop other than this new technology and wireless and all these things that they are talking about. But there are young employees in the CCB snapping up what the ICT service provider is doing. And then transformation of equity goals, I put in a nice picture for you to see that we are on target in terms of that, and our next drive, it's an annual report, not in the presentation. In the next drive, we'll ensure that we stay true to our commitment to represent the demographics of not only the province, but of the country when we develop our South structure. Then looking forward, my penultimate slide, the Jefferson was talking about the clean audit, which is already underway. The commemoration of the 350 in an inclusive, responsible manner. And I'm just saying that the reason why I am elaborating on the 350, the CLD, Council of Defense, under the leadership of the Minister and the Deputy Minister, is sitting on the 27th to just deal with the inclusivity and the responsible commemoration of the 350, because it's very internationally, it's a very important moment for us to reflect on our colonial history and how that will inform our future. Yeah. And I think it's important that we are all at them how we deal with that. I've spoken about the listing. And with that, we will push the issue of integrated conservation management plan, where I made a submission also to logistics division to assist us with that. And we aim for the 200,000 system mark in this year still. And then to attain responsible economic sustainability for the organization, and to entrench ourselves as a recognized and authoritative heritage and tourism voice, not only in the country, but in the entire world.
Sitting on that note?
Yeah, I think that's the last one. I was trying to go into clip just to say something, but it's fine. Thank you.
You're done. Thank you very much. As I said, straight to the point. The last time you, Lieutenant General Bonyana, you were the CEO. Now I see you are the chairperson of the board.
Yes.
Okay. That's good. We feel very honored that you should also bring your board members here when CEO, so that this committee should have as much information as it can. It's very interesting indeed. Honorable members will agree with me. Honorable members, any honorable judges or so?
Thank you, Jefferson. Jefferson, the last slide before this one. The death legend, when you go up, reaching the 200,000, no, the very same slide, reaching the 200,000, yeah, but in
the numbers and be a true center of education, healing and nation building. As you think it's true what you're saying. On the presentation itself, it reflects what you're saying there. But fundamentally, to achieve that, I just want to check with you the strategy that you have in attracting the rural communities to be part of that sentence that you're talking about. Because the people who suffer most and who need an information most are those who are in the rural areas, so that they can come to be part of social cohesion and unity of this country, particularly here in Western Cape. Can you just explain the strategy thereof that you will apply or are intending to apply to bring that unity and cohesion? And also, children, this area is totally like, it's fine, that of course will attract many tourists and many people from outside. But mostly the people who must have sufficient knowledge about the center, the people who stay here, those are the first people to tell us we come here from Mpumalanga, Western Cape, in fact, Mpumalanga, Northwest, Gauteng, and KZN. They must tell us and say, there is this operation or this function or this activity that is taking place in the castle. But as we are moving around here, there are many who does not know what is happening within the castle. So think marketing and the advertising strategy is quite important in that regard to develop the castle itself. I accept Chairperson the presentation, a very nice presentation, and it shows, in fact, a future and also the development of the castle. If it can move in that question, it can be a very, very good thing. But also, your independence on the finances is questionable for me. You get finance, you fund on your own. I should think the department will tell us maybe later of how to assist. Because to find on your own to develop, but in the near future, I should think will be the essence through the department of how to work together to ensure that speed up the process, particularly on the information part of it. Well, thanks very much.
Honorable Issa.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, I think it's a very good focus by the castle, and of course the issue that was not addressed today, of course, is the status to try and take it from a particular level. I think that was the status of the CCP itself, to compare to AMSCO and a different entity, public entity. I think that wasn't a place, that was a discussion that was even the last one, what progress has been made in that regard. The ones, of course, I want to see the achievement on all the targets are very good as well. That's just deviation, I think, on page program 4, page 6, 7, page 8. I think just to correct that one there, I think the plan target of 5 million, I could achieve an 82 million, deviation should be 78 million. So that is just my one. The of course, the issue that always worries us is that the castle itself is not sustainable by itself unless it gets support from the department and the works regiment, etc., to assist. So they cover, as the CEO mentioned, if it's 62 million, can count it by 3. Which means if the castle had to be on its own, it would not be able to sustain itself. And therefore, the whole model of revenue generation, commercialization is so important. And of course, that has been impeded this year because of all the major renovations taking place. I was just there, and normally the cars are normally very busy with tourists and visitors. And I could see there were not so many. And many of the places were still very much under construction and painting, and the people are busy all over. And the film crew was running all over. So I just went there this morning because I thought our meeting was there. Then, of course, I received late notice and then, of course, rushed over here. But certainly the impact will reflect on next year's annual report about the renovations and how many tourists actually visit the sector, and also on the revenue generated through that stream of income. So sustainability is one of the issues that I'm concerned. The sooner we achieve it, the better. And that if they have the renovations handled back, we would like to see that happen, because the conservation and management plan has also going to demand a lot and a lot of the surplus will actually be reduced because of the conservation management plan. So the commercialization plan should be expedited and concluded as soon as possible and implemented so that we can see a return and also a turnaround strategy that actually addresses that shortfall and deficit that has been experienced. We'd like not to see the deficit going ahead because that would depleted the surplus funds. Of course, the status of the institution as a multiple stakeholder and demand type of institution. What is the progress? Because the castle board wanted to be in control of the entire castle. Now they had to negotiate with different stakeholders to achieve that. What is the actual position on that? And that will also be part of the commercialization strategy. The other one is the amendments to the Castle Management Act of 2007-1993. There were certain recommendations made. What is the status of that? And of course, we will get some feedback also from the ministry, but also from the castle itself. The targets, we've noted the comments made, about 33% of the targets were not well defined, and also not very accurate, at least specific. And program 2, 33%, and program 4, 50%. Those questions, as indicated, should be made almost immediately, and that should be something of the past. We have shared the three-year rolling strategy, that it was just a two-year, and that that will be addressed immediately. What I'm also looking at is the under-collection of rainfall at the castle, that is still outstanding, and what arrangements have been put in place so that that income can also come to the budget of the castle. The mean coverage has been taken to a million, that's exceptionally brilliant, and maybe one can also use that to inform other departments to make use of the social media and other media, so that you reach a far greater audience than just paying for normal advertorials in newspapers. So I think that's a great achievement in comparison to other departments. What we don't hear about, the last one we had the performance agreement of the CEO and of course international trips and of course the benefits that we derive from the international trips, particularly the one to Holland that were conducted by the CEO and of course the whole issue of the 350 year heritage event that is going to take place very soon. And of course we do notice that the CEO received the performance bonus and the other members of South Zealand. So if they eat, please indicate. They're smiling. I assume there was some. So there are more people that receive some performance bonus. The AG also noted an issue within the report that are also concerns about the leadership. Now, when we speak about the leadership, we said to speak about the AO, which is the CEO of the institution. What specific issues have the AG raised and how has that been addressed? The two vacancies that are still outstanding. Is there any intent to fill those vacancies almost immediately? And of course, it would have an impact on the budget as well because it will not be a compensation that is withheld, but it actually will be spent. So it's already under post, and I'm sure it will be accommodated. Honourable Chair, I think the one that just a brief explanation of the underspending and overspending in certain areas. I've noticed that we know that there's an increase of the key positions of CEO and the CFO, but his security has also got more than that, almost doubled. Now, security level, there is an indication in the report and the presentation that it is a temporary solution that has been done. So there's been an increase in that budget, and of course, there's a further request for more money. Increased funding for resources for security at 760,000, and already in the budget itself, so it's been doubled. So just to look at those underspending and overspending, and just to give us some explanation of why it's going to move from the two programs, and the other two programs actually overspent. The budget was overspent by 8%, and of course, normally when you do that, you run into deficits for the next budget year. So automatically it impacts on that, and one has to look at other sources of revenue to cover the needs of the following year, which is normally increased as well, according to the inflation. I think on the chair, those are the major issues that I wanted to raise. For now, thank you very much.
Okay, so over to you. Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. I will answer the first 14 and I will ask the CFO to answer the second one if you are still around. Yeah? Okay. Thanks. The strategy about attracting rural people to the castle is very clear. We work through municipalities, the schools, and particularly through Contralesa,
not only the national body but also the provincial, who has a footprint in the rural areas. And particularly on our public holidays, on Heritage Day and Freedom Day, the kids that you saw were dancing in Los Angeles and brought all those things, Wuppertal kids, who brought all those titles back. They cut their teeth in our Heritage Days. So I think that one, I think we if there's any organization that knows how to reach out, we even reach beyond the borders of the Western Cape. I don't even remember when we talk about Inanda, and the connections between Inanda and the castle where King Fedwaya was being detained, and that community where he's coming from, and how we managed with the Department of Education, National Department of Education, to bring those kids to the castle. But we're not only seeing that, we're seeing students, young kids from Botswana, from Lesotho, even from Namibia, coming to the castle. Because in the castle has affected 1,000 Africans easily. And so from that point of view, I think our strategy is very clear, that we work with institutions with footprints in the rural areas to bring the people here. Through you, I was looking for the Honourable Member to raise the question, sorry, but I spoke through you. Then the second one, the issue of financial independence, was raised in both ways, and how do we deal with that if this partnership of other departments stepping in is not working. Despite the renovations, Jefferson, the interest that we have from people, from weddings, photo shoots, events, religious conventions, conferences, although we don't even have a conference room, forming, is already, there are already bookings going up to 2017. Because many of the people wanted it now, but they still prefer the castle as an event. A classical example, some of you remember the Cape Town Flower Festival. In Cape Town International Flower Festival, it used to be on the outskirts of Somerset. And you also know the Kamos Focus Kenka. It's a craft pop-up shop thing. Both of them, the one postponed their event for this year, maybe the next year, the castle in the 350 years, and the other one is already, they moved it to the city hall, but they say the kind of atmosphere in the city hall is not the same as the castle, so they're moving it back next to the castle. And they say whether they are scaffolding or not. So I'm seeing that in preparing the responsible commercialization strategy, we have already put in the building blocks to roll out a commercialization strategy to deal with the day-to-day management of the castle. And also, Chairperson, through you, the renovations is a 30-year cyclical thing. So we won't have major renovations. For us, it's now to deal with the day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month, quarter-by-quarter, preventative maintenance of the castle. And then you need labor. You don't need heavy investments. Take this after winter, or after autumn, take the leaves out of the gutters. Take the sand out of the graves. Remove the quips. If you do that day-to-day maintenance, with the garden team of DPW on the site, then we will know there are cracks. Then we don't have the whole, irrigation system that is managing. So I think we have a golden opportunity to strike that balance now, because we have the resources now. We have a platform, we have a baseline, and I think I'm sure we will be able to manage that. Because of sustainability, let's go to the conservation management plan. Because whilst they're doing the renovations, we collect every document around the physical maintenance and preventative maintenance of the castle that will form part of our conservation management plan. So that the actual conservation management plan is not too much of a cost to the department or the CCB in terms of that. And you're mixing that with the turnaround strategy, because your conservation management plan and your responsible commercialization plan goes hand in hand. Because your conservation management plan will tell you what kind of events can you host there, what kind of events can you not host there. So often it's not only financial considerations that determine how we implement our commercialization strategy, but also heritage and historical reasons. Then the multiple use and stakeholder management. We have had the CFO and I a heart-to-heart with the CFO and the CEO of Ezeco. We told them that the board and the footprint of the community is very clear that if you're on a site under the control of separate entities, you either abide by the precepts of the entity or with the entity instead of against entity. So here we've withheld the one-third contribution until they come to the party. We also, through the deputy minister's intervention, has spoken to the minister to say that we want a dispensation. Well, this is a defense endowment property belonging to the Department of Defense. The Defense Department has enacted, has put out an act to appoint somebody to manage this on their behalf. So all of these old historical, prehistoric arrangements by Colonel Wilson, and they mentioned that some of these people are not around to house for this, it's not articulated in paper, it's not reduced to paper. We, the board has taken a very firm stance and with the support of the ministry to deal with that issue. I know that the DM has also spoken to General Mohira to deal with the defense and their expectations and their, the way that the defense units on site, the members must understand we go for World Heritage Site, then we can't operate this as a quasi-military site still. We need to strike the balance. It's about the memorization of military history, that's fine. But then we can't write it still as an officer's mess or still as a mess. I think that process has also been dealt with in that. We live here, we don't want to describe the history, but the role players operating on the site must subject themselves to the rules and regulations of the managing authority, which is the Castle Control Act, under the guidance of the executive authority. The Castle Management Act, we were on the brink of thinking that we are going to review and deal with the issue in the last process, but then there were only elements of the Pastoral Management Act that has been addressed in the whole defense review process. So we went back to the legal advisor in the minister's office and with the legal drafting team and represented, what do they call it? They call it a memorandum, a policy statement on that. So we hope also to, on the 27th, COD also to get the process up and running again to review the Castle Management Act. So from the board side, we've done what we had to do, and it's up to the legal processes in outside of the realm to deal with that.
Castle 10:50 anniversary, I've said we'll speak that after the 27th.
Then the targets, yes, thank you, there's more comment that we have related to the targets. The comment on the internal audit is also a thing that the chairperson of the audit committee immediately addressed. He is not present here, but he has sent his apology for that. Then the under question of rental income with the over and under expenditure and the security issue CFO will dealt with. The medium average, yes, we have been approached through the chairperson by the Department of Defense to give them the model, and we put them into contact with the people, the media monitoring people. But at the end of the day, if you do not make it worthwhile for media to be at your event, they will not come to your event. You can't simply say that the person leaves your heritage, you have a celebration and you have a few kids who do kumba dancing or whatever, and expect it to be. You must have a message. You must put effort in a social event if you want media to come there. So it's about, probably if there are some departments that want to learn from us, we can engage them and we tell them how to do it in a specific way, how you do it. It's about relationships. Management is about a media, targeting specific media. You can't have a generic thing to everybody. You must be very targeted in the way that you deal with it. So there is a strategy behind that. Because if you get this right, chairperson, you probably save for 5 million rand a year that you would have to do above the line marketing and advertising and editorials if you get right. The performance agreement and the bonuses, I don't determine my own bonus, I don't pay my own bonus, so I'll leave that in the chair to speak about. But the CEO has also got a performance bonus, and my performance agreement is in the new APP also for all to see, so it's as transparent as the bottle in front of me. The 350 heritage thing, yeah. The issues of the AGSA. You would see that we've put a target in the annual performance plan and the number of issues with the AGSA. Not in the AGSA report, but in the management letter. And there were about 2025 when we started, and before my appointment and for the CEO's appointment. And they've been radically reduced.
Chief, you must help me out. I don't know. I've never seen any organization where the AG has done 100% expenditure audit. They've literally spent a month. They've done every expenditure item. And that must be 100. And they couldn't find anything in SEM around that. There are housekeeping things, authority that's not been signed, small things around it. But there's nothing major that they found in our expenditure. Of course, they can't look in our income because we are so simple. We don't get grant from government. We just have the people come through the door for any income. We have events, we have formations. It's a very simple income transactions that we have. But they come through it, and there is not one significant SEM issue raised here. Because, but that I didn't clean up with Mandler's appointment, the CFO's appointment, and the chairperson of the audit committee, they cleaned up. There's a couple of policies that we still need to get out, but otherwise there's no issues. But Mandler, if I slip something, you must just help me around the challenge. Yes, this is the last one. That was the last one, the vacancies, and then I'll go to Mandler to conclude. The two vacancies, as I say, we had to get the next process, and so the board will look at those efforts and we'll put them out in the next month or so, and then we'll address those vacancies. Thank you, Chairperson, remember.
Thank you, sir. In terms of our budget, I would say, in essence, there isn't over expenditure, because we've spent some of the money from the surplus, but now the budgeting process by the National Treasury is dictated to the National Treasury. They don't want us to change the format of budgeting. So if you look at it, that 468 more approximate, if you look at the statement of financial performance, is an amount that is approved out of the surplus, which is about 500,000. So that compensates for the amount that is shown as over-expenditure in the budget. In that context, there shouldn't be no over-expenditure. So we closely approximate our budgeted amounts. Now, if you look at the rental of facilities, it looks like there's an under collection of revenues, because we have 2.1 million as budgeted amounts and 743 as an actual amount. But in essence, it's the way the National Treasury wants us to budget, because of the surplus, and we can't budget for a deficit. So they want us to kind of inflate our revenue to match our expenditure. So I'm trying to engage with them to show that, like, no, we're not receiving any money from the fiscals. So what we could do is to budget, use our own process to budget against our own processes, so that we can actually reflect the money expected from each line item. So the rental facility is not like it's under collection, but somehow we have to match in terms of the budgeting process to match our revenue or our expenditure.
That is
coming
there. There's a liability on that one, too.
That's the money that is owed by the package, so it's not much, it's about 11,000 this year, so they paid some of the money after the end. So, yeah, it's not much amount, it's not a lot of money that's owed by the officials. Our main tenant, if I may say, our main tenant the past financial year was Sarah, and then she's back. They were not paying like market-related rent. They have been up 9,000 rand a month, so she's not a lot. And most of the occupants of the house, they're not paying rent because we have all those commissions and musical museums. So there isn't much to collect rent from. So the money that we make is basically from films and the events that we have at the castle.
Thank you very much. What would you like us to recommend in the DRRR?
Yes, as I indicated, or the representative has indicated, we are not allocated any funds from the fiscus, so we rely on our own revenue as generated from our traditional operational activities. So from the hustle side, we really don't have any recommendations or accommodations to the review. And another thing which I have to bring to your attention is that the council has two phases. On one side, it's that control by the board, and on the other side, it's the responsibility of the Department of Defense through the Chief of Logistics as an endowment property. So we are always cushioned when it comes to financial strain. So I think we cannot be very selfish when it comes to resources.
Are you not very easy?
We are really
But you can't have money for the sake of it. You have already given. We'll take the recommendations. Thank you very much.
Thank you.